Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Tired of nicks, cuts, and bumps? It's time to ditch the blade. Nair, the award-winning number one hair removal brand, gives you silky, smooth skin in as little as 3 minutes. That's smooth that lasts for days longer than shaving. Easy to use, blade-free, dermatologist tested, and made for all skin types. Plus, discover our new sensational fragrances that turn hair removal into a whole vibe. Shave less, glow more. Find Nair at all major retailers.
Iconic summer moments deserve an iconic drink. Reach for Mountain Dew, an American original. From its beginnings in the foothills of Tennessee to your biggest summer yet. The refreshing citrus kick of Mountain Dew is the perfect companion to your American summer adventures. Enjoy the refreshing citrus kick of Mountain Dew, tasting great since 48. Look for Mountain Dew in stores near you at MountainDew.com. That's MountainDew.com.
On this episode of Project Big Screen, we were reviewing The Running Man. Not a remake of the movie, but another adaptation of the Stephen King novel. This has Glenn Powell in it from director Edgar Wright, who we also have an interview with in this episode. And then the third Now You See Me movie, aka Now You See Me, Now You Don't, aka Now You Three Me. Some differing opinions on these two movies. We have some thoughts on new trailers coming out, some big ones, Super Mario Galaxy, Toy Story 5, the new Fallout Season 2 trailer. And then our list, top 10 dumbest franchises ever made. All that and more coming up on Project Big Screen. All right, Project Big Screen, episode 7, middle of November. Kind of crazy. We are nearing the final weeks of the 2025 movie slate. And kind of award season kicking into gear very soon. We're already there. It's nuts. And we have two pretty big releases in terms of, I guess, if you're a big movie person, hype. The Running Man. Not a remake, but another adaptation of the Stephen King, though it was under a different name, book from 1982. Not a remake of the Arnold movie, but obviously based off the same material. And then the third movie in the Now You See Me franchise. We also have an interview with Edgar Wright, director of the new Running Man. We'll be doing a top 10 list as well. Dumbest franchises in honor of Now You See Me. Maybe I'm in the minority here. I actually think I'm going to be in the minority of both reviews today, but we'll see. Could be wrong on that. Could be wrong. Also want to give a quick note off the top, sending our best out to Kirk. We won't have Kirk on here for a little while. Gooch, you'll throw the tweet up on the screen here. Kirk taking a little bit of time. We send him all of our best. He did see these two movies this weekend, but we'll save it because he will be back, as he says in his tweet. He'll give his eventual reviews then. But again, from everyone, Project Big Screen, sending our best to Kirk. To get better. But like he said in his tweet, he will be back. So he'll be back on here at some point soon. But for now, it'll be the four of us. Maybe we'll throw a guest in here if someone has a really intense passion for any of the movies coming up. But let's start out with The Running Man. The Running Man in the near future. The Running Man is the top-rated show on television, a deadly competition where contestants must survive 30 days while being hunted by professional assassins. Desperate for money to save his sick daughter, Ben Richards is convinced by the show's ruthless producer to enter the game as a last resort. Ratings soon skyrocket as Ben's defiant instincts and grit turn into an unexpected fan favorite, as well as a threat to the entire system. 132 minutes long, so just a little over 2 hours. Edgar Wright, last movie he did was Last Night in Soho. He also did Baby Driver, did Scott Pilgrim vs. the World and the Cornetto trilogy, The World's End, Hot Fuzz, and Shaun of the Dead. Glenn Powell in the lead role, Josh Brolin in the movie, Coleman Domingo, Lee Pace, Michael Cera, Amelia Jones. I had to note her because she's very much in the movie. Then a couple other people as well, some fun cameos. Did not do well at the box office, $17 million at the box office, below projections, which initially said, I believe, $20 million. Rotten Tomatoes, 64% from critics, 80% from audiences, 6.8 on IMDb, 56 on Metacritic, 3.3 on Letterboxd. Ken Jack, you go first. The Running Man from Edgar Wright. What did you think?
Yeah, so I think that there's like a kind of a flawed movie in a way, right? Where I think the biggest issue I would have leaving it is that I really wish it committed in one specific direction, because it has some decent comedy. It has some decent, like, more real world dramatic stakes, and then it has like some campiness. But I feel like if it really bit in one direction, this could have been like way better, like way, like more, it would have had more identity. But as it stood, like, I just kind of felt like, I don't know how to explain it exactly. I felt like not let down, but a little bit like I saw failed potential in this. Other than that, though, I think Glenn Powell clearly establishes like he's got juice. He definitely, like, I think there's a sort of a swing for him as far as like an action role goes. I think he was good in the dramatic parts. He was good in the, when he needed to be funny, when he needed to be charismatic and all those things. So I liked all of those. I liked him. I liked the action. I liked some of the jokes. It just, it missed with me not committing. And it also, I feel like with Wright, he has such a flair on his screenplays, and this is just kind of missing that like very, what's that French term? Je ne sais quoi, or whatever. Like, yeah, it's missing nailed that it. From him. Crushed it, yeah. But yeah, that's missing that from him, and which that's something I really want out of Edgar Wright, and I feel like we've been missing between this and Last Night in Soho, which obviously didn't call for that, but I feel like I want more of that, and I didn't really get it.
Next up, Gooch, what'd you give it?
I gave it a 60, which is definitely, I think, a huge letdown when this was announced. Edgar Wright pairing up with one of my favorite up-and-coming stars. It felt like the stars were aligning for something, I think, a lot better than this. And that's not to say this is bad. I wouldn't call this a bad movie, but to Ken Jack's point, there's a lot of failed potential here, and there definitely needed to be a more decisive direction with the screenplay. Edgar Wright, you'll hear our interview with him later, and it's funny because we talked about Guillermo del Toro last week with Frankenstein, a few other directors with these lifelong passion projects. This was a book that he wanted to adapt for a long time. I think he had this movie in his head for quite a while. I don't think he particularly loves the 80s adaptation. I think he wanted to go in a completely different direction because of that, which is, in my opinion, a shame, because if he needed to go in one direction, it was definitely the more campy direction. That's just where his strengths have always lied. Going all the way back to Shaun of the Dead, there's a real, I mean, even before Scott Pilgrim came out, there's a comic bookiness to all of his movies, especially in the humor, the sight gags, things like that, just the way everything moves. And that is almost completely washed away in this movie. And I think it really needed that. And so it got caught in a bit of a no man's land. And it's a shame because I think really the whole cast turned out. Like, I think Glenn Powell is pretty fucking great in a role that I don't think that really plays to his strengths either, but he's enough of a star to make it work. Coleman Domingo, fantastic. Josh Brolin, great. Across the board, I really like these performances, but it just did not come together in a way that really satisfied me. And man, that ending. I it's different from the book, from what I understand. And I think,
very different.
And yeah, and I get
why. For good reason, though. I will spoil it, but I think for good reason.
They can't do that ending. Like, you just cannot do that ending, and we'll talk about it in a minute. But the ending that they ended up going with just feels incomplete and kind of muddled and confusing. So 60 out of 100 for me. Bit of a letdown, but not all bad.
Clemmer, what'd you give it?
What did you give it, Ken Jack? 1 to 100?
I'd give it, like, probably a little bit higher than Gooch, because, like, I would say, like, 65, 70, something like that. 65, I think, because action sequences alone, I think, are worth the price of admission, especially on a big screen.
Yeah, I give it a 66. And this is kind of the tale of two movies for me. The first half I really enjoyed, and kind of like what Gooch was saying, like, when they're having fun, and this is very true with Edgar Wright, like, when he's having fun, that's when he's at his best. Baby Driver, we saw it. Even, like, Last Night in Soho, you saw that. But this guy cannot finish a movie. His endings are always bad. Last Night in Soho completely fell apart. This, I was talking with one of my coworkers, Owen, about it, and he's like, it almost looked like it ran out of money. Like, I'm sure it didn't, but, like, the first half, you have this big world, and they're really doing a great job kind of world building, this cool city and all this stuff going on. And the last half, we're in the woods, and you're on a plane. And like, I don't really, it just felt cheap to me. And I don't know what happened. I don't know why he has such a struggle finishing movies. I don't know what's going on there with him, but it made a good movie into something that gets a very light recommendation from me.
Clemmer, can I ask, outside of Last Night in Soho, which endings really bother you?
I think what happens is you kind of lose the energy. You lose the pulse. Like, Baby Driver, like, the first half Baby Driver, to me, is, like, just so much better than the second half. And a lot of it is just losing that fun element, or losing that, maybe he feels like, second half, you see it sometimes in comedies, like, now I got to stick to the plot more than the actual, like, juice that we have kind of riding when we have the first half of those movies. I don't know what happens, but I don't really enjoy the second half of his movies. And this was a real, this is almost an indictment on that.
Yeah, I'm way, way, way different than all of you. I liked it quite a bit. I gave it an 80. I really enjoyed it. I think there's one problem I have with this movie, one pretty major thread that I think if you kind of just like lop it out, I think there's like no problems. I actually liked the way it ended. I kind of liked the recap thing. I won't say too much more until we get into spoilers, but I had really no issue with that. There's just one part where I think it kind of veers off course because I love all the stuff with Michael Cera. I thought that was a fucking blast. Just like a ton of like random fun. Oddly enough, very similar to something that happens in the next movie we're going to review. It's like kind of weird. These two movies kind of have like the same bones in terms of like what they're trying to do and achieve, and like like weird House of Horrors, and like it's kind of strange that they came out in the same week. But I loved all that stuff. Someone I trust didn't love the Michael Cera stuff, so I was like, oh god, am I going to hate this? I thought it was great. Wacky, kind of out there. I liked that they kind of veered into that. I also had huge Stephen King fans next to me because the second every time Derry got mentioned, they were just fucking up and all. Oh, yeah, let's go. I was like, okay. It's just like a Stephen King adaptation. What do you expect? So I quite enjoyed it. There's just a part of this movie involving Emilia Jones' character, which I think is just wholly unnecessary and kind of stops it dead. But then I do think it, for the most part, kind of gets it back at the end. I like the way this thing ended, so I gave it an 80. I quite enjoy this because when it's working, it's a great time. And I'll tell you what, Edgar Wright, the guy knows how to shoot action. Like he knows how to shoot action scenes, and they're fucking awesome. That initial action scene when he first was up against the hunters in that I guess like apartment building or hotel, it's or whatever,
awesome. Very cool.
Awesome. Oh, it's so it's and I even like a lot of the stuff on the plane I think is great. I just think the problem for that is the story gets a little muddied, and I think that's where it for me drops from. Like if that had been more focused at the end, this is like up there with one of my favorites from him. And I do love all his stuff. Like I'm a huge fan of Baby Driver. Last Night in Soho, not as much as his other stuff. I love the Cornetto trilogy. Love Scott Pilgrim. So I have it at an 80. Spoiler now, the movie ends. Let's start with what the book. They fly the plane into the building in the book.
They 9/11. Like it's
just, yeah. Yes. Which there's two reasons you can't do that. One, probably a 9/11. Probably can't do it. B, the other thing is, like, technology-wise, they would never let that happen. Like, they would just remote blow it up or shoot it out of the sky. So, like, I think, like, logically speaking, like, I don't think you can just have the plane fly into the building. Like, I just don't think that makes any sense, like, story-wise. Because, like, they're able to manipulate literally everything and anything that happens. So, I think letting it fly into the building probably would have been pretty crazy. I kind of liked the recap. So, anyway, so he finds this, he gets into the car with this girl. They drive for a little while. They kind of see everyone like rooting for him. Like, you know, Ben Richards lives, like whatever, which I think some of that stuff works, but the stuff with her kind of drags a little bit. Then he gets into the plane and he's with the Lee Pace character and the hunters, and they fight. And then as the plane is making its way into the city and to crash in the building, it kind of does this jump cut and stop. And it brings up a YouTube video from a character we met earlier in the video who's kind of like a conspiracy theorist about the Running Man on YouTube, which I think was kind of a funny bit to add in, make it modern. He recaps like how and why people think Ben Richards lives, and then he ends up being alive, kind of gets a little nice night moment with his family, and then he shoots the Josh Brolin character dead to kind of end the movie kind of in a bang. See, that part I liked. So like Clemmer, for example, I'll start with you. Like you just kind of hated all of that because I do think it's, I'll agree on one thing. I think the female character, the Emilia Jones character, and Lee Pace, I think you kind of only need one or the other. It gets a little too muddied, and that's where I have my issue with it at the end. But like the specific like ending, the actual ending, I actually did quite like.
The whole Emilia Jones character is completely unnecessary. And this movie, like you said, is 2 hours and 13 minutes, which is like 40 minutes way too long for this movie to be. There's no reason for this movie to be that long. The Michael Cera stuff is a perfect microcosm of why he's like this. It's a flawed storytelling. So Michael Cera, really interesting character, cool setup. We see this house. I love all of that stuff. I'm all in. But then he just impulsively just like has the guys come. Like no way a guy that's that meticulous setting up his house that way would all of a sudden just impulsively just sound the alarm to have the guys come right now. It's like
he kind of achieved what he wanted to do though. No, like he, he fried the guys. He was loving it. Like, he's a psychopath. Like, all he wanted was to face off with the Hunters, and he ended up getting that.
I just don't see a guy that meticulous be that impulsive at the same time. It seems like a contradiction of character. And it just seemed like a rushed way to kind of resolve Michael Cera's storyline. Like, everything in this felt like rushed or like thrown together.
It is so wacky and out there, though, that like, it's not grounded in like stiff reality.
No, it's not. But it's, the characters need to have some sort of bearing. They need to have, I don't care how ridiculous your story is, your characters have to be consistent. The ending of the movie is another great example of like, every ending just felt like stapled together. Like, we have the plane, it jumps cuts to a supermarket, it jump cuts to to behind the scenes at the game show. It's like, you could tell they were just like taping endings on because nothing worked. That's how it felt to me.
I feel like, well, you guys are kind of pointing at it too. I think consolidation would have done really good here. And I think maybe this is where you kind of get into a battle as a director where like, you want to be, he clearly, like, when we were talking to him too, like, he very clearly, like, he loved the book and wanted to make an adaptation of the book. And I assume that meant that he didn't really want to make a lot of changes, whether that meant for the betterment of the actual entertainment product. But like, you could have do a lot of consolidation and get rid of the Emily Jones character, just kind of pointless.
Yeah, because also with her, it's like, but I will say, in terms of being on the nose, like, we get it. Like, you know.
Oh my, the scarf line. Oh,
I got to prove this to myself.
Yeah, that was not, that in terms of like, letter grade F parts of the movie, that was definitely a problem.
That was a big dump. I think you can also consolidate Domingo and Brolin into one character and save some time there too.
Oh, see, I like both.
I did like both
there. I like both too, but also like the idea that this guy created The Running Man, which is the most giant global phenomenon in the world. No one knew who the producer was of it. Like, the guy that created it was kind of strange. I do think you could consolidate that into one thing. And also just, there's just a lot of kind of little moving parts where you can just throw it together. I honestly think you could do something similar to the Michael Cera thing, or even like, who's the two people that like shelter him in Boston? Like, they do that whole little sister with cancer thing too. And like, there's a lot of shit going on. I feel like you can really pare this down a little bit or parse it down a bit.
I really like, I only would, and I hate talking about length because I don't care. Give me 5 hours of whatever. If it works, it doesn't matter. I think it's that the second he gets in that car is where like it kind of for me veers off the tracks a little too much. I'll differ from Clemmer. Like, I think it gets back on track, but I also like can't totally hate the fact that like Clemmer, you say, you know, it doesn't get back on track for you. Like, I get it. But I think her, I think her cutting her out is a huge help to the movie if they do that. Cause I do think it's, and I do think there's a little bit to the Lee Pace character too. Like, how much do you care about the Lee Pace character? Like,
very strange. Lee Pace
character, main Hunter.
So strange.
It's weird to get Lee Pace in your movie and then cover his fucking face and like put him in like a nondescript uniform. Like, you can't tell that he's like the biggest man alive and the most gorgeous man alive. Like, why are you using Lee Pace at that point? Like, it's very strange. I also think William H. Macy and like Michael Cera's characters, probably that's a consolidate that, yeah, into one character. Yeah, how do you guys feel about the politics of this movie? Which I usually hate talking about that, but it's so on the nose in this movie. Does it work, or is it too heavy handed?
Could have been more.
Yeah, I think it's fine. It's all so ridiculous.
So that's the problem, though. It is ridiculous. It's a ridiculous movie, but then you try to make it like the scarf thing. You're trying to like have a statement. It's like, all right, so this, you know, you're watching Glenn Powell, this guy that's worth a shitload of money, you know, judging someone for a scarf they bought. Well, meanwhile, everyone on this set, I'm sure, is buying, Coleman Domingo is buying scarfs that much. Like, what are we doing here? Like,
his hat budget could feed a country, I'm sure.
Like, stop.
You gotta leave that at the door. You gotta leave Glenn Powell's personal net worth.
No, you can't lecture me on that if you're doing the same shit. They're lecturing the audience. That's a lecture. Fuck you. Don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, the whole movie's a lecture in a sense.
So movie star, like, you can't make a movie about income inequality if you have money? That doesn't make any sense,
Chris. You can make a movie about it, but you can't lecture the audience being like, oh, see, kids are sick. You're buying stuff.
I don't know.
You're wagging your finger at us.
None of that bothers me personally. I just think it's like, for me, it's more of a quantity in terms rather than substance. I think like you say it so many times, you start to like break the wall a bit of like me being immersed in it. It's like, all right, I get it. Like I don't mind it. Like, I just, I don't know how many times you got to remind people and say it. Like, I don't mind that Coleman Domingo walks off set. His character walks off set at the end. Like, I think that's fine. I think that adds a little bit to the ending, gives you a little insight into like how that world is when the movie, when the credits roll. But again, it's like you, when you slow down a movie that's moving so fast to have those, that's where it's more just a technical issue for me rather than like being like lectured. Like, I get it. Like, I know what I'm getting into, and I'm going to see The Running Man. Right. Like the same thing we're going to see The Hunger Games or, you know, whatever, The Long Walk. Like, I understand what I'm getting into. So it doesn't really bother me that they're going to I know they're going to talk about it.
But The Long Walk did it better. And I think did it in a much more natural and a much more effective fashion. This doesn't know what it wants to be. Does it want to be campy? Does it want to be a political statement? Does it want to be an action movie?
I think it's just campy from start to finish. I think it's unapologetically campy.
I don't think those two work in opposition either. Campiness and being, you know, having a message. I mean, that's what Verhoeven, like that's
Verhoeven
what
everything, he built yeah.
is. That's and his whole career.
He's great at it. This felt like Walmart Verhoeven.
And I think that was the biggest, what you hear this Edgar Wright interview, he'll bring up at one point when we're talking about the Schwarzenegger version, he says Total Recall is actually the movie that really influenced this.
I can see that.
For sure. I think if you just push that envelope a little bit more on the camp and make it like you were saying with Verhoeven, like Starship Troopers, you know what I mean? Where it's like that's, it almost could be, like, I prefer if it's like infrared, you know what I mean? So much so that people could watch it and think that like the network is cool. Like, you know what I mean? That's, I think, the version of this would be a little bit more successful as far as like political messaging goes. But I'm kind of like trying to like bifurcate it where like I have the actual drama elements or storytelling elements of it, and then the action parts of it. And the action parts of it, I think, all work. And that, to me, is like, you go to the theater for that part of the experience, and that part of the experience is good. So that's fine with me.
It sounds like I'm kind of down this movie, which I'm just more frustrated because I like the first half so much. But I do want to like shout out like Glenn Powell, who carries this entire movie.
He's in like every scene. He's in like every shot almost.
And he's great. Like, and he's a legitimate action star, which we don't have a ton of nowadays. So like, that to me was like a real takeaway, was how good his performance was. And like, hopefully he keeps doing more of these things, which I think he will.
Yeah.
Chris, do you think he's believable as the father of a biracial child?
Sure.
There was a tweet going around that was like, that basically, and I kind of agree with it, that just Glenn Powell, just not believable as the father of a biracial baby. Just like, yeah, just some people's faces. You're just like, he's from Texas. Oh. No shot.
Oh, that didn't affect. No, I didn't.
My brother, he's from Austin, Texas. That's it.
Oh, that's fair. Like, yeah, true. Austin. The fucking libs. The fucking libs.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, look. I think we kind of disagree on some levels. I guess I do at least. I have an 80. Klemmer 66. Ken Jack 65. Gooch 60. I do think we can all agree though that there is just a little bit of an overstuffed third and final act, and it's just varying degrees of how much you think works and how much it doesn't work. And for someone like me, where it mostly works, I think you're gonna have a really great time with this. And I think if it doesn't work, you're gonna enjoy a lot of it, but eventually kind of fall off a bit. And like I said, the trains go off the track just a touch. But definitely a big explosive fun movie for at least a long time in this movie. And then it kind of, I guess, varies as to where you kind of land on that ending. So 80 for me, Klemmer 66, Ken Jack 65, Gooch 60. That is The Running Man from Edgar Wright. Next up, Now You See Me, Now You Don't. Some people
not call it made Now with AI. Let's make sure that make knows not made with AI.
Not the, made with AI. Now You Thank See God. Me. Three. Now You See Me, Now You Don't. Now You Three Me. The original Four Horsemen. 10 years since the last one. Is that true? By the way, that's really been 10 years since the last one.
I rewatched both of these, Christ. Jeff. So yes, I'm well aware. 2013, 2016, and now.
So a franchise that started, it's like an Eat the Rich Magicians franchise. I mean, that's just,
it's true.
So they initially, they're being, in the first movie, they're being chased by Mark Ruffalo, who's a cop, and they're teaming up with, they're teaming up with, who are they teaming up with in the first one? It's,
Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman's character. Yeah. I don't know. I'm about to slip of the tongue on Morgan Freeman. They're teaming up with Morgan Freeman's character. With Michael Caine's character. Morgan Freeman's character is kind of like a magician exposer. The movie ends with Michael Caine's character losing all his money, and then Mark Ruffalo is apparently in the eye, and he's like the leader of the magicians, and then Morgan Freeman's in jail. All right, in the next movie, They kind of like Morgan Freeman now. And then they're being chased by Michael Caine's son, who's played by Harry Potter. And then they find out that all along Morgan Freeman's character, like, has a connection to Mark Ruffalo's character and has been kind of the leader all along. And you're like, okay. And Isla Fisher, who's in the first one, is not there anymore. Now Lily Kaplan's character's there for reasons that are probably connected, I believe, to like money and scheduling for being.
I think pregnancy. I think she's pregnant. Really, legitimately, like, okay. Like, yeah, that's why.
So, yeah, it's a pretty absurdist and ridiculous franchise. And I just want to note up, I hate it. I've said it before. If you listen to our old show, Lights, Camera, Barstool, I hate this franchise. I think it makes no sense, and we'll get into that in a second. So the new one now, the original Four Horsemen, 10 years later, reunite with a new trio of young magicians to take down a corrupt diamond heiress, Veronica Vanderberg, who launders money for criminals. The mission is to steal the heart, a big diamond, Thor's largest diamond, from Vanderberg's clutches in a global heist, aided by the legendary Thaddeus Bradley. Played by Morgan Freeman, he's back. The two generations of illusionists must combine their skills to expose the criminal empire. So Now You See Me, Now You Don't has everybody returning for the most part. We will spoil a surprise return of two people in a moment. Dave Franco, Isla Fisher, both back. Jesse Eisenberg back. Woody Harrelson back. New cast members, though, Ariana Greenblatt, Justice Smith, and Dominic Sessa, they're in the movie as the new magicians. Rosamund Pike plays the villain, the big bad. Ruben Fleischer directed this movie, did Uncharted, Zombieland 2, Venom, Gangster Squad, his most recent movies. I think he did original Zombieland as well. 112 minutes long. I think it won the box office this weekend. Did I get that right? Okay, yes, won the box office this weekend. People like it. Look. I was both theaters I saw these movies in were completely full. There is a bit of a Glen Powell's literally from this area, like the town I'm in. So I don't know if it's like that people just love Glen Powell around here. So I don't know how the theater was everywhere else. People love him here. Now You See Me, though, I'll tell you what, people were hooting and hollering during this movie. Oh my God. $21 million this weekend at the box office. 59% from critics, 81% audiences, 6.3 IMDb, 50 from Metacritic, 3.1 from Letterboxd. A little bit of context. I gave the first one, I believe, a 45. I gave the second movie an 8 out of 100.
Stinker.
This one kind of in the middle, though it leans closer to the first. I loathe this movie. 35 out of 100. I can suspend disbelief for a lot. I just can't do it. This is gonna offend someone. I'm sure people are gonna be like, you're an asshole, whatever. This franchise is for the lowest common denominator, dumbest person you possibly know. I'm sorry if that's you, then that's great. I'm sure there's some dumb stuff that I like. There's plenty of dumb stuff that I like that you think is pathetic, and that's perfectly okay. But this is like, I hate these, and I can't even talk about the twist, which doesn't make sense, by the way. It doesn't. We'll get into it. It doesn't make sense.
It made sense to me.
And I liked it. It's just too fantastical for me. Like, if you told me, like, hey, like, the concept is there. Like, magicians who, like, actually saying it a lot sounds so lame. Magicians for change against the rich. Ugh. Like, but if this was like real magic and they were like doing these things with like actual, like Ocean's 11 with magic, but it's too fantastical, and they dialed it back a little bit because the second one was wizards. There's a great YouTube video I've referenced it before. Are they magicians or wizards? And Now You See Me. And I just think once you break that and it's like Harry Potter, it's like, well then they can just do anything. Like, what's like, okay, they're fine. Like anyway, so 35 to 100, we'll get more into it in spoilers. I hated this, hated it. Loved it. Like, I loved it, but I hate it. Like, I love the idea of going, I loved. Like, I enjoyed seeing it so I could talk about it and make fun of it, but I hated the movie. Clemmer, what'd you give it?
Yeah, I give it a 55. I don't hate this as much as you do. I will say I misspoke on the last episode. I thought I had seen both one and two. I'd only seen one. Which one I still think is, like, the perfect plane movie. You're watching the plane. The second you're off the plane, you never think about it again. The second one is just a bad movie. That movie just sucks. It's a terrible, terrible movie. It's just so stupid. This is closer to the first one than the second one, kind of like what Jeff said. I have a bit more patience for these movies than I think Jeff does. Yeah, they're silly and stupid. I will say Rosamund Pike's accent is incredible.
Amazing.
It's like a mix of German and Southern. It's kind of like Bean or like Jackson Maine. You want to like imitate it the second you leave the theater. I'm very interested in her accent choice there. It's just a ridiculous movie. It's stupid. I don't recommend this movie, but it's not, it's not like horrible. I don't know. It exists. I'm happy for movie theater owners that $20 million came their way.
It exists.
What? It exists. And I'll say this too. Everyone is having fun doing the movie. Like the last one.
Yeah, they really enjoy it.
Miserable the whole time. Cause I think he just done Lex Luthor and he was just pissy. This one, everyone's having fun, but like, it's just stupid. It's like, it exists and it is completely pointless and stupid, but it's mildly entertaining.
Ken, Jack, what'd you give it?
I'm closer to you, and like I'm very much with you in like the lowest common denominator, like room temperature IQ, like, oh, magicians. Like it's so fucking stupid.
I won't say what Kirk thought about these two movies, but I will say Kirk quite often on his show has said that the Yellowstone franchise is a franchise for dumb people.
Right.
And we joked yesterday. I said like there is someone who absolutely mouth agape, drooling, walked out of this theater to go home and like watch the Landman trailer. Like that's yeah. Again, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to sound snobby. Like I definitely like stuff just as dumb as this. I'm just a hater of this franchise. I'm sorry. Continue. Yeah.
It's very much like ironically the AI thing. It's like the same people that love this, I think, are the people that laugh at like the AI videos of like Trump pooping on people or whatever, and like, oh, so funny. Like it's like that same audience person. I'm with you, Clemmer, and like there is a value to watching something where you can tell the actors are having a great time, and everyone, all these cast members, anytime you ask them about these movies, they light up. Like they're like, oh yeah, oh my god, let me talk about Now You See Me. Oh man, I had so much fun on that. Like it's like a vacation for them or something. They love it, and I can appreciate that. And sometimes that comes on screen, and you feel it as an audience member, which I like. It's just like you need to do something like you were saying, Jeff. Do practical magic, like do something on a set, do close up magic, do fucking Tom Cruise flinging a card out of midair, like do something like that. And I'm a little more in, like twist and turn wise. CGI magic does nothing for me. That's like, do you remember, actually, you know, it's the same guy that loves this. Do you remember that TikTok guy, or not TikTok guy, this is like Vine guy, Zach, is it Zach King?
Yeah. Zach
King. You remember
King,
that guy?
Yeah.
This is the audience, the people that ate that shit up are these people that love these movies for sure. I don't have any much value to that. And especially after the second one was such a fucking stupid, bummer movie, dumb, stupid twists. So like I don't have a lot of value for CGI magic. I can appreciate the entertainment product of having of feeling like I'm having fun with the actors. I like that. Not much else doing for me. I know, but I will say, if anybody else wants to make a movie where Rosamund Pike plays a sexual South African like heiress, diamond heiress, Vandervart or whatever, like I'm in. Do that 100 more times. I'll watch it every time.
I got to be clear too. Like I don't, and I think I know you're not saying Caesar. This doesn't need to be the Prestige. Like but like there is a level. Again, like I said, like make me one time think the trick might not work. Right? Like make me one time think that if the trick doesn't work, you're not going to do a reveal 30 minutes later that the trick not working was the plan.
I'd rather watch like Oz the Mentalist or whatever. You know what I mean? Like I'd rather watch that. Than this. That to me is significantly more impressive than magic done on a great
That space. Guy's a demon. Oz the Mentalist is a demon. That guy is, he's
fuck that guy. I'm afraid of him deeply.
Gooch loved this movie, by the way. This is going to be like, what'd you give it, Ken Jack?
Give it like a 35, I think is healthy for this.
Oh no.
It's not good. It's just not good. It's like, there's no, like, what do you want me to do here?
this is a line in the sand monumental score from Gooch right now, by the way. This is like, this is big. What did you give it?
I mean, war, pandemics, AI. We need magic now more than ever.
The script is all timer terrible in the beginning. In the first 20 minutes, the script is atrocious.
The second they opened up at a underground magic show in Bushwick, Brooklyn, I was all in. I gave this a 70 out of 100. This
oh my is god!
Absolute blast, Rosamund Pike. Rosamund Pike, one of the performances of the year from Rosamund Pike. She is incredible in this movie. The Three New Horsemen Hell yeah. Give me three more. Give me three more of these movies with Dominic Sessa and Justice Smith, who I've never liked in a movie until now. Great twist at the end. No, I'm just kidding. The twist was terrible, but had a good time the whole way through. I really did. This is a lot better than the second one. I'd even go as far as to say I might like this more than the first one, simply based off like the villain of this is just great. In the first one, the villain like being like, you don't really even get a villain until like the end. Like when the they're end like, probably, oh, Michael Caine is like an insurance guy or something. This was just straightforward, James Bond-ass villain, campy as hell. Had a great time, and it kept moving. And it's 114 minutes long. This is like what I want out of these mid-budget movies. They don't have to be world-ending, Oscar-winning movies that have messaging, even though this kind of tries to. But they don't need to be has like messaging.
It's an Eat the Rich movie. It's like
it's almost tongue-in-cheek, yeah. Though. They're like, it's like they don't even take it seriously. Like one of the guys is like the richest person in the world. One of the teammates, I mean, I don't want to give it away, but good Lord. Had a great time, though. Had a really, really fun time with this movie. And my theater did, too. Like, I think everyone who goes, most of the people that are going to see this movie are in on the joke by now.
It is worth noting, this movie is definitely in the same budget tax bracket as The Running Man, by the way. Mid-budget is like, that's a little bit of a, still costs like $100 million to make. It's not like it was.
Did it cost that much? Because always one of Lionsgate, because Lionsgate always says that they're a little cheaper than other big studios. Did it cost $100 million to make this?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's up there. It might have been $90 million.
Mm. Okay.
This cost $90 million?
$90 million.
No, you couldn't tell?
I was
you feel it on screen for
that.
Sure.
I know the cast is pretty big.
So let me – okay, so let's just spoil it really quickly. I don't even know how to spoil it. It's so convoluted. Here's so the Justice Smith character is, you find out, is the brother or like half brother of Rosamund Pike's
character.
Van
der Vaart heir.
Yeah, Veronica Vanderberg. He has a perfectly fine, normal American accent the whole movie. There's a reveal. He's been taunting her via a phone call the entire movie, and you don't know who it is. You think it's some, like, I thought it was Mark Ruffalo's character for most of the movie. I was, like, pretty convinced it was.
Did you catch the number that pops up on our phone screen when she's getting the calls?
No.
2010.
That was it?
Just 2010, 2010.
Well, that's when it happened. But that's when the accident happened.
Oh, wow, what a great catch.
I'll pick that up on my next viewing.
This is so rich. You got to keep watching these, Jeff.
So you then get this reveal. They go this whole thing. She gets into a car. She almost kills all the other horsemen. She gets into a car, which he's driving, by the way, not in disguise. He's just got a hat on. Mm-hmm. She drives him. This is, by the way, I think the same F1 track that the movie F1 ends at, by the way. And then they get to this like fake stage, and she thinks she's inside this vault area, and he pops out and he has a thick South African accent. He's like, you know, actually, like, for me all along. And she recognizes him in the shadows. Like, he's not even fully out of the shadows. And she, I want to remind you, she has seen this guy's face 100 times in this movie. Like, he was the assistant for a whole camera production. He made a massive scene. And then he was just front and center when the diamond got stolen. And she sees it for 2 seconds. She's like, oh my God, it's my brother. So for logic number one, I don't know how she only just saw it. Like, that is crazy.
Who she also hasn't seen since he was 7 years old.
Yeah, and she's been staring at him the whole time in this movie. Like, he has been there in front of her face multiple times.
But she should never recognize him. How would she tie a seven-year-old? Like, how would she know what he looks like?
So he's got this thick accent, and then the rest of the movie, he just doesn't anymore. And I don't know why. Can anyone explain why he doesn't have that accent the rest of the movie? Does he actually have a South African accent? Or is he faking it for that moment?
Or maybe he used to have the accent when she knew him. And now that he's back in New York as a magician, he has a different accent.
Because at first, I'm like, he did the American accent to trick the other horsemen. But then the rest of the movie, he's back in the American accent. But they all heard that accent. I can't – look, that's not the reason it's a 35. but it's driving me crazy. I can't figure out why his accent was American, then South African, then back to American, as if like, I thought initially it was like, oh, hey, the reveal, South African accent, and then he'd like drop it. I can't figure it out for the life of me. And then also he, and then they explain, so that they drove the car into the back of a truck, which is kind of like an okay thing. And then they had a gun. They purposely wanted her to pick up a gun. She picks up a gun from Dominic Sessa's character, who is not in disguise, by the way.
No.
Looks exactly like he's looked the entire movie. Like, the most recognizable person she should probably ever see. And they put one real bullet in it so he could do the bullet catch trick, which they teased earlier in the movie. And then the rest were blanks. So, like, thank God she shot him in the face and he was able to do the bullet catch. That's another one. Like, see, my whole point is, like, it's just so dumb. And I just can't deal with that.
The bullet catch was always blanks, right? And then you're just pretending you have a bullet in your mouth? So I think it was always blanks. Isn't that That's how the bullet catch thing works?
Okay, then I just didn't know that. And that's my lack of magic.
You don't actually catch the bullet with your teeth.
I don't know. These guys probably could. They're horsemen.
Yeah, but these movies, they're horsemen. Would you put it past them? I mean, the things they do in these movies are
now,
so...
Jeff, I will say there is an element where something they tried didn't work at first when they're all stuck in the sand water.
Back. I know that was stunning. I will say that was a shocking moment when
scary.
It didn't all work.
What if they didn't get out? You're worried you might not get out. She uses, of course, her ring, which was a callback from earlier to get out of the vat. That's good stuff.
They showed how they stole the diamond. That was preposterous. How nobody in that museum saw that diamond fart out the back of that machine. it literally farted the diamond out of the back of the machine. It's just so stupid. It's so stupid.
The heart. Was it the heart, right?
It's so frustratingly dumb. Like it drives me insane.
It's exhausting to talk about, honestly. Like it is it's an exhausting movie to try to digest. It's just stupid CGI fucking Zach King magic. It's Zach King movies. He should be in these, honestly.
It really is. If you don't know who Zach King is, look him up. You probably do, because he was big in the Vine. He'd be one of those guys where, like, right here he is. Here's his water bottle, where you'd be like, hey, water bottle. And then you zoom out and it's really like 50 feet tall or something. It's like it's visual tricks that he would do on. That's the best comp I've ever heard of these movies. It's exactly what it is.
Gooch, do you like this movie ironically, obviously. You don't actually like this movie.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good movie by any stretch. Yeah. Like, it's not good, but it's fun and enjoyable time at the theaters. Like, and people keep saying it's Ocean's 11, but to me, these movies feel so much closer to Scooby-Doo. Like, they're Scooby-Doo-ass movies.
Yeah.
I love that structure of the
gang.
See,
I would actually
together.
Like that. If they got together with the mystery gang, like, that'd be amazing. Like, that's a perfect combination of dumb. And that's admitting that you are fantastical and wizardry and, like, bring the supernatural guys in there.
Bring them all. Jared Padalecki.
Yeah. Bring in Jensen Ackles. Bring them all in. Like this. That's my thing. It's like, it is funny. Like, I think it's pretty clear that from the second movie, they took the critiques that they were too wizardry. There was too much wizardry in the last one. Like, but it's still too, it just doesn't work for me. It doesn't work.
Well, we're getting more. We're getting more.
We're getting more.
Did you like the Mark Ruffalo cameo at the end?
Do you think he did that on Zoom or FaceTime? How do you think he recorded that?
Yeah, obviously on the studios at Marvel, you know, to get another Hulk makeup. I mean, like, he couldn't even be on set.
Couldn't is the wrong word. I don't think he wanted to be on set, if I'm being like, that's a guy who didn't want to be. He's like, yeah, whatever.
Really?
I guess I'll do it.
I think these guys love these movies. I think he did want to be there. He probably got,
he always has the lamest role out of everybody, though. He has like the least fun role out of everyone, I feel like. Remember that love story in the first movie? Oh, I hope they bring that love story back sometime
soon. With the Interpol agent.
Melanie Laurent.
Yeah.
Let's go. Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
That movie, we need more of that.
If they just did like a colder or maybe like a harder reboot and they just did like the new version of the Horseman and like give the Eisenberg and them a cameo then, maybe it'll be a little bit stronger because I like Sessa. Like Sessa has like that, he has that something which I think works for a movie like this, like a heist, little goofy, charismatic, quirked up white boy shit. Like he's got that down in like the Eisenberg sort of coaching tree, I guess. So I would have liked that. I feel like there's a lot of mouths to feed in this one, right?
I really like their dynamic too. between Sessa and Eisenberg. Like, I thought the rapport was really fucking good, to be honest.
The Atlas Order line, yeah.
Yeah, would you?
We even get Lizzie Kaplan at the end. Like, we get everyone's there. This is a Cecil B. DeMille film. This is,
yeah, turning a fucking event.
There is also, I will say, there is a bit of snarkiness that I just don't love with the scripting. Like, I don't find myself rooting for any of them. Like, they're just like too like nasty to each other. They all hate each other. That's the thing. It's like they don't like each other. They all have problems with it. Like, it's kind of bizarre. Like, I get it. Like, it's going for like that modern day like snark humor, but like it just doesn't work for me. It's not enjoyable.
It wants to be Ocean's 11, obviously, very bad.
For sure.
Yeah.
But obviously it's lacking a very big fat Steven Soderbergh to make that work.
And also the charm of, you know, Damon Clooney. And Pitt, this is, they want to be that same, they're trying to capture the camaraderie those guys have in this, but this just comes off as like snarky asshole, where those guys come off as friends.
It's a big time coworker movie, you know what I mean? Like registered nurses love this movie, I'm sure. Like, there's a certain, like, this is like that type of thing, and it's not a fellow's movie. A fellow's movie is Oceans. This is a coworker.
Yeah.
How crazy did your guys' theaters go at every single character reveal? Because they do intro them like the fucking portal scene. Like, yeah, every single time they're like, oh my God, these guys are hypnotized. Oh fuck, Woody Harrelson's back. like they kind of set you up with each character's return to be like, oh, whoa. You're just like, oh man.
It's so funny too, because like, we love that shit when it's Marvel, but it's like with this, I don't feel that same connection to it at all, which is my only hang up on it. And it says we're dumping on it. Like, it's not like the worst movie in the world or anything. Just
you give it a 35.
It's not the worst movie in the world. There's seen way worse movies this year.
I know, but like, I don't recommend this movie, but it's closer to a recommendation than other movies I've seen.
Yeah, sure.
Like, this is like middle of the pack for me of movies I've seen so far this year.
It's not, yeah, again, it's not, I don't think it's like the worst thing ever. It's just, we need a third Now You See Me. And first of all, I think the 10 points came off for not calling it Now You Threw Me. Like, that is legit. That is a legitimate gripe. And not calling the second one Now You Don't, another legitimate gripe with the movie. Two big fuck ups, in my opinion.
It should have been Now You Threw Me is the number one thing, like, for sure. My number one complaint should have been Now You Threw Me. What a whiff. And now the next, you know what the next one's going to be? If moving naming stays consistent, the next one's going to be Now You See Me.
Right.
Yeah.
just the old Fast and Furious.
Yeah. Yeah. Scary movie.
Damien.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I hate these movies.
If you could pick any director to actually, obviously we just threw out Soderbergh. If you could pick any director to come in and actually make a good version, like a really like respected version of one of these movies, who would you pick? Because I do think, like, this concept, like, in theory, like, there is, like, a really fucking great movie.
Like, is hidden. There?
I do think so. Like, Magic and Heist, I think, is, like, with, like, the Scooby-Doo gang element mixed in, I think, you know, that's enough. Those are enough good ingredients to make something great.
Coincidentally, I think Edgar Wright would probably crush one of these.
Oh. I don't hate
the first half, and the movie would fall apart at the end.
Two endings. I still don't know what you're talking
about. Yeah, I don't totally vibe with that complaint either.
Like, Last Night in Soho fell apart. And we
collapsed. But like Shaun of the Dead's fantastic, great ending.
Baby Driver's ending, great.
Baby Driver's ending is not good. Fantastic. It's not as good ending. As the first half of that movie. You think the second half is as good as the first half of that movie?
John Hamm going insane in the final 30 minutes?
Yeah, I love
Baby Driver. That's great.
Yeah, we don't see eye to eye at all on those. I love all his endings. Last Night in Soho definitely had some problems. That's for sure.
Yeah, the ending of Last Night in Soho is the issue.
It's time for an Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg read.
And Running Man is the issue.
Yeah, he was nice enough to sign it for me. My Cornetto trilogy. Oh, awesome.
He was very cool. Stick around for the interview.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's Anyway. Yeah. that's Now You See Me, Now You Don't. So I don't know what our second movie is. Obviously, next week we're doing Wicked 2, but I don't know what our second movie is going to be.
Rental Family, I'm guessing.
Maybe Rental Family, but we will figure it out.
It's in 2,000 screens next week.
I'd love to watch that. Yeah.
But that's also going to streaming, right?
Oh, I don't know.
I thought Rental Family was Apple, but I could be wrong.
Oh, I don't know. I know it's getting like 2,000 screen rollout.
Feels like an Apple movie.
Yeah.
It does. It has big time Apple movie. I could be completely wrong on that, though. Yeah, I think I am. We'll figure it out, though. Keep an eye on our social media feeds. But we will definitely be doing Wicked. That's a big one next week. And then something else.
Sisu. Could do Sisu.
Yep, Sisu 2. I know that's in a bunch of theaters. Could do that. So yeah, we'll figure it out. Next up. All right, this episode of Project Big Screen brought to you in part by Game Time, the best place to get tickets for anything, sporting events, stand-up comedy, music, and more. I want to see Rush, actually, this summer. In June in Fort Worth, and I got tickets, guess where? On Game Time, because Game Time wants you to focus on the music, not the cost, not the stress, not the fees, none of that shit. They want to put the power back in the hands of you, the buyer, the fans. It's your go-to place for amazing tickets and anything, like I just said, sports, music, comedy, theater, anything. Incredibly easy to use. Game Time guarantee also means you'll get 100% authentic tickets on time, in your hands, ready to go at the best price. Put the fees away. They're always included. You don't got to worry about them afterward. You don't see a price and then say, oh, wow, it's skyrocketed. No, Game Time, it's all up front, all easy, and all convenient. Take the guesswork out of buying concert tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PROJECT for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Create an account, redeem code PROJECT, P-R-O-J-E-C-T, for $20 off. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Download the Game Time app today. Cinema time. A little bit of movie news, trailer roundup. Then we'll do our interview, then our list. A lot of trailers came out. I'll get some quick thoughts on some of these trailers. Super Mario Galaxy movie. The last movie, which was, I think, 45 minutes long, the last Mario Brothers movie, it made a billion. How much? Did it make a billion and a half?
Yeah, it made well over a billion. Insane money.
One of the highest movies of all time.
Yes.
I love the look of this movie, I will say. I love the look of the last one, too. I do think for what they're trying to do, the last one worked. It was, like, stupid, silly, and pointless. But, like, for what it was, like, enjoyable enough. I think this one looks like they're just going to expand on that and kind of have fun with it. So I have no complaint. For something like this, no complaints. I think they've done a nice job. Again, I think it looks really nice.
I think the first one's, like, one of the better kids' movies we've gotten. Like, strictly for kids' movies we've gotten in the past, like, decade. To your point, 90 minutes long, moves so fast, doesn't try to do the Pixar tug at your heartstrings. It's just like a fun time for kids.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I had a blast with that one. And that's one where I think we were all kind of like, I don't know. You got Chris Pratt playing another Italian beloved band. Like, I don't know if this one's going to work. And yeah, I mean, the voice cast was all great. Jack Black was awesome. Pretty much loved everything about him. It was like the perfect, like you were saying. They didn't try to do too much. They kept it very simple, which I appreciated.
Clemmer, a longtime Atari Jaguar fan, not a fan of this Mario slop.
I know. I grew up with Mario. No, if anything, I grew up with Mario more than probably you guys did.
No, you definitely did.
As far as like, it was the video game of my childhood. Yeah, I mean, I what they're doing works, so keep going. I mean, it's one of the biggest box office successes of this decade. I mean, it's just a behemoth, so good for them.
Toy Story 5 trailer, bringing some technology into it. Bonnie gets an iPad, which we kind of knew about. Conan O'Brien voicing a character. Just a quick teaser, nothing crazy on this one, though this one's going to obviously make a shitload of money as well, just like the fourth one did. It's unnecessary to keep making these, but I will say, like, the fourth one was pretty fucking good, but it kind of got crap because people were just mad they made a fourth Toy Story, but, like, it was a good movie, so it was whatever. Like, Forky, people loved Forky. So, I mean, like, I think at this point they know what they're doing with Toy Story. So I'm just trusting this is probably just going to be another good one. Even though, obviously, the first three, they should just wrap it with the third. But at this point, it is what if they're going to make them, if they're good, they're good.
Yeah, if they still make good movies, like, why wrap it up? Like, yeah. Especially if you're, like, kids' movies, so many of them are just trash. So if they're putting out a good product, yes, we should be kind of thankful they're making these, I think.
Yes and no, because I do think they've been great, like, across the board. But there is like a lack of innovation, I think, going on at Pixar right now that I don't know if you ask the Toy Story franchise, but like I would like to see them really commit to original movies, which is like what they built their empire on.
It's I think the sequel problem is less on Toy Story than on the others.
Yes.
Right. And I understand like updating Toy Story and the lore of this to more match what modern kids do and play with. I do like that. That does make sense. And kind of a natural progression. I think it does fit. But I would agree. There's a sequel. Yeah, it's like tomorrow. Like Good Dinosaur 2 coming out.
I mean, we say we want original movies from Pixar, but then you watch something like Elio, and you're like, it wasn't a terrible movie by any stretch, but like that was not a good movie.
I think it's kind of like a symbiotic relationship, though, right? Where like you need the Toy Stories to make the money to fund the opportunities for more original shit. So like this is a cash cow. Yeah. You keep making them. It doesn't matter. I don't feel like it. Obviously, Toy Story 3 was like such a great definitive ending that they just kind of like moved on from, which kind of sucks. But as long as it's making money and it's giving them the chance to make more original shit, that's fine.
Do you guys think Toy Story 4, 5, Toy Story 5 or Super Mario next year? Which one makes more money?
Super Mario.
Mario's
probably
got the
Super Mario, but I wouldn't put it past a Disney machine to figure it out with Toy Story. Both will I also don't know what's going up against either.
Both will make insane amount of money. So like we're talking about like, you know, who's better, William Mays or Mickey Mantle.
Let's see. Super Mario Galaxy comes out with the drama from A24. Good luck on that one. The drama comes out in April 3rd.
April.
Yeah, the runway after Mario is Ready or Not 2, The Mummy. Not The Mummy that we're all excited for, Brendan Fraser coming back. And then a bunch of and then the Michael Jackson movie does come out at the end of April, but it is not a kids movie, obviously. That's not a no, there's no joke or hidden.
Well,
definitely not a kids movie
there. but in terms of box office, in terms of screens, that does come into it. And then Toy Story 5 comes out the week before Supergirl, which I think is going to obliterate it. And then Minions 3 does come out in the beginning of July, a couple weeks after. So that will be an interesting box office battle.
What are you saying? Toy Story is going to obliterate Supergirl?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of like screens and stuff, I think Supergirl has a big I think there's going to be a couple of DC movies that have a DOA label on them.
Really?
I loved Superman. I hope the DCU thrives, but Superman wasn't exactly a world beater at the box office.
No, it wasn't. It did okay, but
it did. And I think it's already had more of a mainstream stamp than Man of Steel had, no matter how many posts on Vero Zack Snyder likes about Man of Steel making more money. But I do worry a little bit with the DCU stuff. I don't know how much people care.
I Toy Story is going to make more money than Supergirl. No question about it. You're right. It will annihilate it. But I think both can coexist.
I think in terms of runway, what's more of an obstacle for Toy Story? It's probably Minions 3.
Which also will make an insane amount of money.
Yeah, and it'll be a meme and all that. Devil Wears Prada 2. Everyone excited? Everyone coming back?
Sure.
I can go fuck, to be honest.
That trailer looked fucking terrible.
Yeah.
Why?
It just looks like physically or visually looks okay. Bad. Looks like terrible. Looks like a commercial.
But it's not like, I don't think it's a scene. It's not a scene from the movie. They're just doing that for the trailer. Like she's walking in a hallway and they go to an elevator. Like that's just a. That's not going to be in the movie.
I'm very curious how that does at the box office, because I'll have a lot of nostalgia hype, but will it enough of a bump?
It'll make over 100 domestic, I would think.
Yeah.
There's a real – a lot of people really like this movie, like the original. And it has some cultural, like, stickiness to it.
Yes. Next trailer, The Housemaid, Sydney Sweeney, Amanda Seyfried, Brendan Sklenar. Sklenar? Is that
he's
got
to change that. He's got to change that sucker. I'm sorry. I hate pronouncing it.
Yeah. Paul Feig directing this kind of horror thriller, like romance thriller. Looks interesting, but all I can think about is just how is Sydney Sweeney's just continued just chaos right now in the movie industry. Just at every it's nuts. I'm seeing Christie this week.
Me too.
She's got interviews about the jeans ad. She's going at people. It's her current story as an actress in Hollywood is fascinating. This one, you never know with Paul Feig. Paul Feig could throw out the biggest pile of shit you've ever seen in your life, but he could also put out like a fun kind of thriller. The first simple plan. What was it called?
Simple Favor.
Simple Favor, yeah. The first Simple Favor was a great time. So I don't know. I could see this being kind of entertaining and fun.
The second one was one of the biggest pile of shits I've ever seen. I don't know how that got released.
I'll say this, and you can clip this if you want. Go crazy. This is going to make a shit ton of money. This is going to make an insane amount of money. This book is very popular that it's based off of.
I could see this having – what was her movie with Glenn Powell?
Anyone but you.
Anyone but you.
I could see this having a box office kind of like viral move. I could definitely see that.
I think it beats that by like a good amount. I think this makes a lot of money. Now maybe I'm wrong, but I really this is one of my like.
No, I don't hate that prediction at all.
All the Sydney Sweeney box office poison stuff is all going to be laid to rest by January 15th when this movie's had 3 weeks of making a ton of money.
So it ends with us made 351, and that's I think would be my barometer based off of like super mega popular book being adapted into this.
That would be incredible if it does that.
This is the movie for the RNs.
Oh yeah,
this is.
Oh yeah.
Also has one of the funniest if it's the trailer that's playing in theaters right now that we're talking about, has one of the funniest slowed down pop songs of all time. Yes. For a trailer. Me and Owen saw, we'll talk about it in a minute, No Other Choice a week ago, and we're watching that trailer, and then a minute in, you just get the please, 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 just the dramatic, yeah, slowed down version of Sabrina Carpenter.
I'll tell you what, there's a trailer song picker. What a job if you're good at it. Oh, yeah, it's like, if you're good at picking songs for trailers, man, that's what a fucking awesome time that must be.
What a life.
And then two more trailers, Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die, Sam Rockwell, Zazie Beetz from Gore Verbinski. This looks like a kind of a fun trailer.
Yeah.
Whether it's good or not, I don't know.
There's one major problem with that trailer, though. It's by Briarcliff Entertainment. So, no, like, I just don't know if this is going to get a real chance.
You a big Briarcliff hater?
Is this the same? Is that the same company doing the movie, the anniversary, the one that you're...
I don't know if they... Did they do anything? They don't do a good job promoting their movies. That's my problem. And this movie looks like a blast. Like, I'm all, you know, let's go. Gore Verbinski, I'm in. But I'm afraid it's not going to get the proper rollout.
Yeah. Briarcliff has some strange movies.
Yeah. I think you're onto something there.
They're the one that eventually released The Apprentice, I believe. Yes, they did.
They did.
They did Sovereign. Sovereign was good. But yeah, no one heard about that.
The movie, I'm not saying they do bad movies. Like, I'm just bad saying promoters. They
just promoting it. Yeah,
promote the movie well. And they also, they don't put enough screens. Like, they have a hard time rolling shit out, which is going to hurt a movie like this, which sucks. This is one I'm actually kind of really excited for the first quarter of the next year.
And then Fallout Season 2 trailer, which showed a lot, by the way. I feel like the Fallout Season 2 trailer was way too long.
Couldn't agree more.
I was pumped on Macaulay Culkin's in it. Looks awesome. Like, I'm very excited for Fallout Season 2. But it was like, it's one of those trailers where you kind of get like lost in it, and then you're like, why am I watching this? Like, this is too much stuff. Like, I'm just seeing too many things. But it does look fascinating. I'm very excited for it.
I loved season one. That was such a fun season of television. Yeah. Man. And like, you can really tell a lot of like obviously Jonathan Nolan, like he gets the games, which I loved. And he also like, there's something so hard with video game adaptations where like you need to appeal to two very different audiences, right? Like, you need to appeal to the fans, but you also need to appeal to a mainstream audience that's never played Fallout in their life. And I think he did hit a really sound balance with like a little tiny like bits of fan service for us, and then like regular stuff for everyone else. And Purnell is, she's a fucking star, dude. I love her. She's so good in it. Mm-hmm. And obviously Goggins, but
great cast. Yeah, I'm very excited.
Yeah, season one, that was such a nice surprise, because I was fully expecting that to be terrible, and it was just great. I think I binged it in like a day.
I watched the first few episodes. I tapped out, but it was well made. Like, I don't have any connection to the games, and the story just didn't really click for me, but it's a quality production. I can see why people like it a lot.
And then lastly, that was the last trailer. And then next up, new Star Trek from Dungeons & Dragons directors John Goldstein and John Francis Daly would be brand new characters, though. Not from the Kelvin timeline, so none of the Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, Zoe Saldana, none of those characters. That seems as though that franchise, which had one awesome first movie, a letdown second movie, though I would argue watchable Star Trek Into Darkness. Sure. And then the third one, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Like an awesome, yeah, fun space adventure like Star Trek. Even though not like very Star Trek-y, but like fun, right? Like, it was like a little more action-y than like a... But this is merely new characters and everything. I don't know. I'm a little disappointed that they never were able to figure it out with that arm of the franchise. The Kelvin timeline, as it's called, for Trekkies.
Star Trek should be so much bigger than it is. Like, it's crazy to me, because like I went through, I remember the first time I watched the next generation, because like I was never into Star Trek. I'm like, I'm a Star Wars guy, I don't really like this, like I'm not into that nerd shit, because like that's how the kind of the cultural zeitgeist changed with it, right? Like, because now Star Wars became mainstream, it's normal, but then like Star Trek was still on this periphery. And then I watched, I'm like, this is so fucking good. I went through all of it so quick, then Deep Space Nine, then all Enterprise, not as good, but I think it's good. It's a really cool lore. There's a lot of stuff they can get into. And I do think that the Goldstein Daily combo has put together some really good shit. They obviously did the script for Spider-Man Homecoming, which is awesome. Put their own flair on that. They did Game Night. They wrote Horrible Bosses, two great comedies. And also, like, I think they did a great job making an adaptation for Dungeons & Dragons. Because like I was just saying with the video game adaptations, that's such a dense material of nerd shit that is so hard to try and like press into mainstream. And I'm not a D&D guy. And I watched that movie, and you guys know, I thought that was going to be
terrible. You were an all-time hater of that trailer.
based on that trailer, I'm like, this is going to be a biggest pile of shit. It was so charming. I loved that movie. It was very, very fun. It's super entertaining. And I think they did a really good job of, like I was saying before, like striking that balance. So I think it's a fantastic pick to direct a new version of Star Trek and maybe bring it into that sort of mainstream feel, which is weird to say, because like obviously Star Trek's super popular, but it's not like on the level of Star Wars, and it should be.
It's fallen off so much, Kenjack. When I was a kid, you know, Star Wars was in the 80s. Star Wars obviously ruled the day, but Star Trek was right there behind it. Star Trek was a big deal. Those movies made a lot of money. And then The Next Generation was very popular on syndication. And my dad loved Star Trek. I grew up in a Star Trek house. My dad loved Star Wars too, but Star Trek to me was like such a smarter... They always had a really interesting... We talk about like how like some like Running Man was like political. Star Trek can be kind of too, but I think they do it in a much more elegant fashion. Star Trek Next Generation is like one of the best all-time shows. I love Star Trek. I'm so bummed out. It's kind of fallen off. It isn't really mainstream anymore. I bet if you ask a bunch of 20-year-olds, like, who is Bones? They won't know. Yeah. Like, and why should they?
Yeah.
So hopefully this... I like Daly and Goldstein a lot, so I'm hoping that this will re-energize that, because I think Star Trek is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should have a significantly more interesting stake in kind of where we are right now in terms of, like, modern pop culture, and it just doesn't.
Whenever we talk Star Trek versus Star Wars, I can't help but think about the Fanboys movie and Seth Rogen as the Trekkie. So good.
Whatever they do, though, and anyone who's a fan of Red Letter Media will know this name, Alex Kurtzman cannot be the head of the Star Trek universe for anything new they do. Alex Kurtzman is a producer, a writer who has done over the years Mission Impossible 3, I think he wrote on, then he wrote Transformers, then Star Trek, and then from there it was like Revenge of the Fallen, Transformers, Cowboys and Aliens, Into Darkness, Amazing Spider-Man 2, The Mummy with Tom Cruise. And now I think he's a producer on the Now You See Me franchise. He's a producer on the Now You See Me franchise.
Oh, shit.
And he was also the executive producer of a movie called Star Trek 31, which came out on Paramount Plus this year. One of the worst things I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, unbelievable how bad it is. And it has a great cast too. Michelle Yeoh's in it. Sam Richardson's in it. It is dreadful. And as far away as he can be as possible, for the love of God, please. Please.
This is a wild fucking filmography. Ender's Game, Eagle Eye, fucking The Proposal. Jesus
Christ. I like those last two.
News uncredited. This is an insane Cowboys and Aliens. People, what the fuck? Who is this guy?
They Red Letter Media guys. If you're familiar with Red Letter Media on YouTube, you know. If not, you should become familiar. They're great. They have a long obsession with Alex Kurtzman because he's tied to so many piles of shit. It's unbelievable. And then finally, Brainiac, the next villain for DCU in The Man of Tomorrow, according to The Wrap. This has been kind of around for a few weeks now. The Wrap seems to be confirming it more. There is a rumor person. Her name is Grace Randolph on social media. Okay. If you're into the rumor game of movies, you know who she is. I put her at a trust level of like 1%, but I have to throw these names out there. She claims that people who are being thought of for Brainiac include Klaus Bang, David Hyde Pierce, and Wallace Shawn, one of Ken Jack's favorite voices.
Oh, Wallace Shawn of what do you call it? Big Sheldon for fame or whatever. Did you see that?
Wallace
that lady?
Shawn's not from Big Sheldon fame.
No,
Wallace.
Do you remember? You didn't see that tweet from?
No.
Oh, you would lose your shit.
Oh, okay, good.
Some like girl was like canvassing for Zoran, and like she was doing it with Wallace Shawn, and she goes, "I just met the doctor from Big Young Sheldon."
All right, good.
Legend Young Sheldon. Also, speaking of people from the Toy Story franchise, among many things, Princess Bride, obviously.
Great run on Gossip Girl.
What? That was a wild list.
I don't believe any of the names on that list, personally.
At Boar's Head, we've been going back to school for over 115 years. And this year, every school lunch is reason to celebrate. With the flavors your kids love and the exceptional quality you expect. Helping you make school lunch fresh, easy, and delicious. Ring the bell. The deli is open. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
And then finally, anything you guys watching, anything you got on physical media? I'll start you, Ken Jack.
I didn't get anything new. I did watch the I got the History of Violence on Criterion. and I watched the director's commentary with Cronenberg. It was very funny. He's, yeah, I tweeted it, but the guy, he was like very, very proud that he apparently has the first on-screen 69 in a movie, which is hilarious. The scene with Viggo Mortensen or Maria Bello. Very funny, but such a good movie. What a banger. I mean, Hurt is all-time legendary in that. And I'm just like, them being like, what was their actual last name? Like, they had a very standard, like, English last name, but for some reason they all had the super Italian accents, the Philly gang. And he's, I love that movie. It's so good. Endlessly rewatchable to me.
Great movie.
Gooch, what about you?
Didn't get anything new, but I did get to see No Other Choice this week, which easily top five on the year for me. I think it's fighting for that second spot. It's the new movie from Park Chan-wook. It's a Korean filmmaker. If you're not familiar with him, he did Old Boy, Lady Vengeance, I don't think he has really any misses. And this movie was just fantastic. It's funny. It's dark, has very smart commentary. It's based on an American book. But yeah, no, I really, really loved it. Somebody's going to have a great double feature on Christmas Day with Marty Supreme and that movie, No Other Choice. Movies with very similar kind of energies to them, I would say. Yeah, no, just fantastic. Definitely see that this year if it's playing near you. And it should be. I think they're pushing it wide, which is crazy, on Christmas Day.
Yeah, very, very excited.
That's awesome.
Very.
Can't wait for an American directed or try and remake it already.
Oh, God.
Clemmer, what about you?
Yeah, I don't know how much we're going to talk. I'm guessing we'll talk about Jay Kelly more when it comes out. I hated it. Hated Jay Kelly. Hated it. Hated it. Hated it.
I think we might differ on that one. I'm very excited for it.
I was excited for it.
I had two people text me. They said, you're going to fucking love Jay Kelly. I was like, okay.
I was excited for it. I love Baumbach. I love Clooney. And it just, I love Sandler. It just felt like just complete bizarro ego project. It's, feel bad for this rich movie star. It's very strange. I also saw Sentimental Value. I don't know if we're going to talk about that on this show eventually, but that is my fourth.
I'm seeing that this week. Very excited.
I saw it again yesterday.
Renee Renzvé is only in good movies.
Oh my gosh.
It's also rumored that that's going to be a role that gets Skarsgård potentially an Oscar. That makes that race really heat up. If you haven't seen movies from
Trier, Joachim Trier.
Joachim Trier, yeah. He has made some of the best movies in the last 15, 20 years.
This isn't as good as Worst Person in the World to me, which I think is like one of the like 100 best movies ever. But it's like, it's not far behind. I have this labeled as like, I've only seen four great movies this year. This is one of them. It's fantastic. It really exposes the flaws of Jay Kelly and Here, the Robert Zemeckis movie. Because in this Sentimental Value, the house is very much a character. And the way they handle that is, it's just, everyone feels real, doesn't feel cliche. It's my big problem with Jay Kelly. It's all these cliches, all these tropes. It's not the case here. These people feel like real people. It's a wonderful, wonderful film. If you can get a chance to see Sentimental Value, check it out.
Yeah, if you've not seen Oslo, August 31st, if you've not seen Worst Person in the World, you need to go see it.
Oh, you know what I want to see too? Then the new Osgood Perkins piece of shit. I can't wait to watch that.
Keeper.
Yeah. Keeper, yeah.
That came organically on my TikTok feed. Some guy walked out of it 20 minutes in and he's like, this movie is so fucking bad that, and I need to get out and get fresh air. That seemed more palatable to me than staying and watching the movie I paid to see.
I'm dreading that. I'm seeing that in a couple of weeks. I'm dreading it.
Yeah, the movie, they're, it's that time of year where things are just flying off the charts, loading up. I saw a couple things, but I'm going to start off with the Harry Potter, actually audiobooks, the full cast audiobooks on Audible.
Oh, yeah.
So I've never read the books. I've never read the Harry Potter books. And I want to kind of know them more ahead of the HBO series, which comes out. By the way, I thought it came out in 2027. I couldn't believe it comes out in 2026. I can't believe it comes out in 2027. That feels like a long way away. So I wanted to see that. They're audio dramas. So there's a lot of background noise, a lot of like sound effects and stuff. And I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And I will say it has made me appreciate the fact they're doing this on HBO more and more as I listen. I knew a lot of what was left out of Harry Potter from the books or the movies, but it is kind of fascinating when you hear it all happen and it gives you different context and like the amount that Harry was abused, the amount that Harry is a superstar in the world. Like it really makes you go, damn, like I love those movies, but like they kind of undersold a lot of stuff with Harry, especially early on. And just that alone builds that character up so much more. I'm like, you know what? Like this really does deserve a significantly more faithful adaptation to even just like the little things. But like, it's not really just little scenes either. It's like just like literally Harry Potter, the main character. Like, you appreciate how much bigger of a deal he was, how much he was just fucking abused by the Dursleys. Like, it's crazy. And it really just puts it in different context. So I've listened to it. It's on Audible. They're releasing. There's huge names in this, in the all audio. You have
like Hugh Laurie, right?
Yeah, it's so full cast Harry Potter.
Keira Knightley.
Hugh Laurie plays Dumbledore. Actually, Arabella Stanton, who plays Hermione in the HBO series, plays Hermione in, which is kind of weird, but she plays in the audio where she's fantastic. Riz Ahmed plays Snape. Matthew McFadden plays Voldemort. The ton of people in this. Yeah, Keira Knightley's in this as Umbridge. Kit Harington's in this as Professor Lockhart. So there's a ton of big voices in it. So yeah, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. If you've only been to movies, not a books person, I'd say that. And also, like, I will be a staunch defender of the HBO series. I think it's all I've ever heard, right, Ken Jack? It's like, we've talked about this for years now. Like, the books, they left out so much, Not even people be like, well, why is it necessary? I don't know. You've been telling me for years that you left out so much. So that's why. So I'm excited for it. That's kind of my long-winded defense of that.
I will say, Jeff, as you get further into the books, you will pick up on storylines within the universe that are like Harry's parents is such an interesting, like, their experience at Hogwarts. Like, you get hints to it throughout like the series, and I still think that's like the direction they should have gone. Like, I get why they're doing this, and they did leave out a bunch of stuff, especially in the world building side, which is like, that's where Rowling is just like, she operates at a different level when it comes to the world building stuff. That's like her strength as a writer. It's incredible. But I think those movies did such a good job of parsing out like the important stuff.
I still love those movies. I got to be very clear. I love the Harry Potter franchise. Yeah.
There's not much you could have done. Like, I love, I always mention that the Quidditch World Cup is such a great scene to read in the books, and they had to dump it. Like, you can't do that. Can't do a full length game.
But that's, again, that's why HBO, 10 episodes or whatever, that's great. Like, they're going to flush it out.
You mentioned Matthew McFadden, right? Death by Lightning. Pretty great. Fucking good.
Yes. I'm glad you said that. I enjoyed it. It kind of lost a little bit of steam at the end, naturally due to the story, but the story of, I almost said Andrew Garfield's assassination. It's not Andrew Garfield.
Garfield's
assassination.
James Garfield.
Yeah, James Garfield's assassination. It's very great cast. Michael Shannon.
It's an all-time like dude cast. Like, you turn around, there's Shea Whigham. Like, it's
Shea Whigham in a great role.
Oh, great.
Loses a little steam at the end, but I enjoyed it. Yeah.
How many episodes is this?
Just four.
Oh.
It's a quick watch.
And it's really, that whole story intrigues me. So I got to check out.
It's about the length of a long movie. It's just a long movie. I'd be interested to see if any of them pick up some awards for a limited series. They're all three of them. The three leads are very fucking good. Michael Shannon
is awesome.
Great. And I think McFadden is really fucking good. I mean, he's a great actor, but he's great as Gateau.
I saw Nuremberg. I'll get to Pluribus at the end here because I have thoughts on Pluribus. I saw Nuremberg. Didn't love it. I think Russell Crowe's good in it. I think it's kind of a boring courtroom war. Like, it's a bummer. I think it should be way more fascinating. I'm not as, like, I know, like, I'm not a huge historian of World War II, but I do consume a lot of, especially movies, TV. This could have been so much better. And I actually like Rami Malek in it, too. And I know we're big, not Rami Malek haters, but we'll have to kind of clown on some Rami Malek roles. I think it's casted well. Another Michael Shannon movie, by the way, or another Michael Shannon vehicle, I guess. It just doesn't work for me. It's just not as compelling as it should be for something that is so obviously monumental in the history of the world. And it's just, I don't know. There's some good stuff in it, but for so much of it, it's also, there's a lot of magic in this movie. I just, trust me. There's
what?
There's
what am I walking into tomorrow?
There's more believable hand-to-hand magic in Nuremberg than there is in Now You See Me, Now You Don't.
All right.
I saw Playdate, which I know you watch, Ken Jack. Playdate on Amazon Prime. Really stupid.
I thought that'd be way worse. I thought that'd be a lot worse.
It's dumb, but it's not as bad as I thought it would be.
Yeah.
I like Kevin James. I just can't help it. I just can't help it. Like, even in the worst stuff, I kind of just like Kevin James. I also saw a Disney Christmas movie, Disney Plus, called Joy to the World with Emmanuel Shariki and what's his face from fucking One Tree Hill. He's in only, he only does Christmas movies now.
Chad Michael Murray.
He only does Christmas movies. Yes. Also from obviously other romantic movies, a terrible, dreadful movie on Disney Plus. If you want a new Christmas movie. And then I also saw a movie that Clemmer, you'll give us 100 out of 100 if you've seen it. Soul on Fire.
I did not give it 100 out of 100. It was not good at all.
This is a movie made for Clemmer. It's about It's William H. Macy playing Jack Buck. That is you.
And the movie is it's about as uneven a movie as it's terrible.
I'm mostly kidding. Your ears perked up when you heard a movie about Jack Buck. A little bit.
No, I did. I saw the trailer. I'm like, what the fuck is happening? No, like it is he's oddly like good in it, but the other actors are so terrible. This movie is it's a bad movie.
Yeah, it's a movie about
shoehorns religion in bizarre ways.
I'll read the synopsis. Tragic accident leaves 90-year-old John O'Leary with burns covering 100% of his body. He soon embarks on a miraculous road trip to recovery with support from the family, community, and baseball announcer Jack Buck. It's
the whole third act is him being a motivational speaker. It's fucking bad. This movie stinks.
It's from the guy who did the Ronald Reagan movie. Reagan.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah. That makes sense.
It's also not made by Angel Studio, which is unbelievable. And then finally, has everyone seen Pluribus?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I gotta say, this might be a bad take. I'm kind of like leaning more out on Pluribus than I am in on Pluribus. I don't love it.
Bad take.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
I don't love it. I'm like, I'm gonna watch it the second it comes out. I love Apple TV shows, but something for me, it's like almost too slow of a burn for me. And maybe it's because I don't like her as a character. Like I'm sick of her. But I'm interested enough where I'm gonna watch the whole thing. And maybe I hope by the end of it I change my tune. I'm willing to accept bad take on that, but I'm also not gonna sit here and lie and say I love it. But you guys all love it.
It's setting itself up for like potentially a massive disappointment, I would say, because it's very much a home run swing, you know? That's what I would say about it so far.
I love it and have full faith in Gilligan wrapping up. I think the endings of Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad, I don't know if you can end two shows.
That's why I'm sticking through it.
And that was, to your point about starting, it's definitely starting slow, but I think that's been a trademark for him. And he's, to his credit, he takes his time setting up these storylines. He's a very smart guy. And Rhea Seehorn, just a fantastic actress. I really love this. It's kind of going back to his X-Files days, bringing in like this kind of supernatural element into the world.
I'm very glad he went away from the Breaking Bad universe.
The first episode, so much happens. Like, I don't think it's that much of a slow burn. I think second and third.
That's where kind of like I'm wavering a bit. I hope I'm wrong. I hope you can make fun of me in a few weeks, be like, you big dummy. Go watch the Now You See Me movies, you big dummy. You don't deserve to watch. I hope that's what you guys say in a few weeks. That's what I'm hoping for. We're up to 24 storylines on The Morning Show, by the way. Now that's a show for dumb people. One of the worst things ever made.
I think you're the only human being that watches it. Like legitimately the only human being that watches that shows you.
There are three people in the world that watch it. We work with all of them. And one of them loves it. And one day I'm going to have him on. One of our coworkers, Ryan Whitney, loves The Morning Show. Former NHL player, if you know who Ryan Whitney is, which if you're listening, you probably do. But I want Whitney to come on one day and just talk about that show. Edgar Wright. Unfortunately, Clemmer does not storm in the middle of this interview, I don't believe, and tell Edgar Wright that his endings stink. But Gooch and Kenjack sat down with Edgar Wright in person.
They didn't want me in the room. I'm surprised.
They said, "No, we can't have you." Clemmer's banging on the door, being like, "Your endings stink, bro."
Let me in.
Edgar Wright interview. Here it is.
Okay, welcome to an interview. Edgar Wright, a man we've talked about ad nauseum, not only ahead of Running Man, which we were talking about today, but many, many other movies last night in Soho, I think most recently for us. Oh, yeah. So excited to talk to you. Again, Running Man, a man joins a game show with contestants allowed to go anywhere in the world are pursued by hunters hired to kill them November 14th. If you're watching this, make sure you go and watch it. Big, fun action movie. The ones that we feel like we're always like calling for it. You know what I mean? We're always waiting for these movies to come out. And it feels like we've kind of lost that feel, and you get it back here for sure.
Oh, that's great. I mean, I always like think I try to make the films that I miss, you know? And I think back, I was kind of old enough to have, been seeing a lot of those like originals back in the 80s and 90s when it felt like you got a sci-fi action film every 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. All the time. And this one, I think, obviously a very separate adaptation from the Stephen King novel from the 87 movie. But how helpful was it to have that one as something to sort of draw off? It's like, hey, this worked. Maybe this didn't work. What can we do here with ours?
I mean, I guess it was more the fact that I had read the book when I was 14. I probably started reading... I think the right age to start reading Stephen King is too young.
Mm-hmm, of course.
So I was probably like 12 when I started reading Stephen King books. And for any, you know, as you know, with Stephen King books, it's in terms of your parents frowning upon the content, it's not so much the horror, it's the everything else. Mm-hmm. It's all of the real world stuff is like, oh, wow, graphic sex, adultery. What's going on? I'm 12. But The Running Man I read when I was 14, and I read it before I saw the Arnold Schwarzenegger version, because that came out in the UK in a whole year later, like, oh, wow. Like 88, but it was an 18 certificate. So, and in the UK, unlike the States, you know, like you could, a parent or guardian could take you to an R-rated film. Mm-hmm. That isn't the case in the UK. If it's a 15, under 15s can't go. If it's an 18, under 18s can't go.
I'm so glad for the Revolutionary War. No, I'm just kidding.
So there were no irresponsible parents to take you to The Running Man. Mm-hmm. Like, so I didn't. So by the time I saw the movie, I had already read the book, and even as a teenager, visualized the book in my head. And so when I saw the Schwarzenegger version, which is, of course, is super entertaining in its own right, but it's a whole different
Very
thing
different.
From the book. So I kind of had the book in my head, and when I saw the movie, I was like, oh wow, they kind of didn't really adapt it at all, apart from some of the game show elements on the actual set. The rest of it, who Ben Richards is, how the game works, you know, also the perspective of it, just it's all from his perspective. It was all completely different. So I think as I became a director, I always had in the back of my mind as a big Stephen King fan, there's another whole movie in that novel. Mm-hmm. So really when we were working on it, it was really to go back to the novel because in doing it, I don't even really call it a remake because it's not like a remake of the 1987 film. It's a new adaptation exactly. of the source material. And when there are remakes of films, my favorite ones are when they do something completely different. Mm-hmm. Like David Cronenberg's The Fly is an all-time great remake because it's not like the 50s film. They both totally work. In this case, it's like, why would you even attempt to do a remake of the Arnold film? It is its own thing, and you know it would just be like karaoke trying to do that. Mm-hmm. So I thought let's go back to the book and do something completely different with it.
Mm-hmm. Back to Ben Richards, he is a much different leading character than I think you've ever utilized before, and Glenn Powell is a much different leading man than you've ever utilized before. What was the process in finding that perfect match for you?
I think the big thing is in the book, he's like, he is an out of work dad. And the big thing about the novel and how it starts is he goes to the network building by choice, out of desperation, yeah. but by choice. Like he isn't kind of forced to go and compete. I mean, he doesn't want to go on The Running Man. He wants to get on one of the other ones. He goes, yeah. I can get on that treadmill.
Yeah.
I can get on Speed the Wheel and win $1,000 yep. easy. But of course, it doesn't work out like that. So he's willing to risk injury, not death. But the thing with Glenn and why we thought he was perfect is that, you know, he's not a trained killer. He's not a superhero. Mm-hmm. He's works in construction. So he's kind of tough and he's got a thick hide, but he's not an existing action hero at the start of the film. Mm-hmm. He's like, he's on the couch. He's been blacklisted from work. He's very frustrated. He can't provide for his family. His daughter's sick. And, you know, and he's kind of worried about how much his wife is working and he wants to kind of get out there and try and get some money fast for medicine. So that was the big thing. So we kept, when we were writing it and working with Glenn, we kept talking about films where we feel like the hero is slightly out of his depth. Mm-hmm. And two examples, and they're both a bit different because these are people who have an element of daring do, but Indiana Jones in Red's
I was
going to
say, yeah.
You know, he's an archaeologist, he's an adventurer, he's a college lecturer, and throughout the movie, he's frequently out of his depth. He's kind of winging it a lot of the time and improvising, and you know, he's getting punched in the face and drops like a sack of potatoes. Similarly, John McClane in the first Die Hard, and first Die Hard only, have to make, you know, because I think from the second ones on, he becomes bulletproof. But in the first one, yes, he's a cop, but he's not on home turf. He's completely outnumbered and outgunned. He hasn't got his shoes on.
Mm-hmm. No, he does
so
not.
He spends the whole movie on his heels. And so the thing with this, with the reason why Glenn was perfect, is that we wanted him to be somebody that has this everyman quality. You could relate to him. And also because you know that he doesn't really kind of have like a, you know, a particular set of skills, to name another franchise. Mm-hmm. Like that you would feel scared for his well-being, you know, mm-hmm. that you think like he's going to get killed. Like nobody's won this game, by the way. There's never, yeah. nobody's yeah. ever won the Running Man. And it's not clear that anybody will ever win the Running Man. Yeah. So we just wanted it to be more exciting because you felt like Ben Richards could die.
Yeah. I like that you mentioned that that sort of switch too, because I feel like in the 80s, or especially in the Arnold era, it's like you had the big bulking man that could never be harmed. And then that switch, I think, really happened in the Die Hard era, where it was like, oh, we want to see them get the crap beat out of them because that's more human, to make you feel like more empathized with seeing them as like one of, you could be someone you know versus.
Yeah. And also, I think it's also about casting as well, because before Bruce Willis was Bruce Willis, he, you know, when Die Hard came out, he's the guy from Moonlight.
Exactly, the guy from Moonlight.
And there was a thing at the time, similar with Matt Damon in the Bourne Identity, before that movie, mm-hmm. you know, he's the guy from Good Will Hunting.
Yeah, and Talented Mr. Ripley, how are you going to put him in this?
Yeah, what's he going to be like as an action hero? And of course, he kills it.
Yeah.
Same thing with like Die Hard, is that first there were sort of raised eyebrows, is like, oh, the guy from Moonlighting.
The TV guy? You're going to
yeah,
put him
the Moonlighting guy
yeah.
is going to be in an action movie. And of course, it's the best ever, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think there was something of that in kind of Glenn's casting. Obviously, Glenn's, you know, been in Top Gun Maverick and Expendables 3, but he's never led an action film himself,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I think you are the third director now to, I don't know if this is intentional because I haven't read the book, so I don't know if this is in the text, but you're the third director now in like 2 years to put Glenn Powell in a disguise.
Yeah.
why are you all Powers. Hiding his handsome face?
I know, it's like he's turning into Inspector Clouseau.
Yeah.
You know, it is in the book.
Okay, okay.
Like, it is in the book that he kind of... And also,
so it's a him thing. He's gravitating towards the material. Yeah, disguise. He gets to hide it.
I mean, I think... Well, because it's like Hitman. What's the other one with this?
Hitman and Chad Powers.
Chad Powers. Show, yes. And I think he does... I'm not sure if he does disguises in another one. Chad Powers, of course, yeah.
He kind of does, saying he could, Everybody Wants Some with Linklater.
Yeah, he kind of does. Yeah, kind of,
because he has to sneak into a party. Is where he tries to look like a theater kid.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The best of his ability.
A different version of this movie is that Glenn's character goes into the network building as Chad Powers. Powers.
Yeah.
As soon as he comes off the show, he just rips off the Chad Powers prosthetics, yes. and he's good.
Like Tom Cruise, actually, just ripping off the mask.
Yeah. but to speak to that, we did have this thing we were talking about it, that the moments in there where he doesn't stay in the disguises for long. Mm-hmm. You can tell that he's kind of itchy in the disguise and he wants to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And we also had to have disguises that, like, he doesn't have a hair and makeup department with him on the road. So the wig is, you know, it's not the
simplified.
It's simplified. So is the moustache. But I said, when he's doing some accents, like, he pretends to be like a kind of upper class businessman at one point.
Yeah.
And I said, you got to do a voice. You know, like when you do a celebrity impression and the first time you do it out loud is the first time you've ever done it out loud. And you're like,
ooh.
Oh, that didn't work.
Oh, yeah. No. Yep. Comes out like, Jamaican. You're like, how the hell did that
happen? How did that happen? And then I said, do the voice like it's the first time you've ever done the voice.
Yeah.
And so later when he's praying, like pretending to be an Irish priest.
Yeah, Irish was pretty good.
But I sort of said, still do the Irish accent like you've never done it out loud before.
It was very funny. A production thing that I noted while watching that I really liked was like a lot of 80s movies take place in like these slums and industrial parks, and it feels like it's been turned more to like kind of like the John Wick like sleek club. Yeah. You're in a very sophisticated place, and this really brought it back to that sort of grimier feel, which was that like in a very intentional way? We want that.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much from the book. I mean, the crazy thing about the book is that it was published in 1982 under his pseudonym Richard Bachman, but he wrote it in 1973. And you know what year he set the book in?
What's
2025?
That's right. I did read that. Yeah. Yep.
Which is wild.
Yeah.
So Stephen King, kind of back in 1973, is just plucking like a cool number out of the air. Like 2025 sounds cool.
It's a good one.
But I did like the idea that in this, what we never say the year in the movie, mm-hmm. and the reason for that is that a lot of sci-fi movies never go far enough.
Yeah.
Like
we've
sailed way past 2001.
Back to the Future, we did like 2013, and they had hoverboards and stuff.
Yeah. Or like Escape from New York is like, the year is 1997.
Yeah.
And it's like, go further. So we just said, don't say the date. And then we just imagine, well, maybe it's like a different, it's an alternate 2025.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 2025 that Stephen King imagined in 1982.
Exactly.
And as such, like, just kind of basically taking where we are now and exaggerating everything. Like the wealth gap is way bigger. Mm-hmm. All of the sleek parts are all the uptown parts. Everything else has gone to shit.
Yeah.
You know, so everything else has regressed and like sort of, you know, and in the book it's called like he's from Slumside, you know, the downtown areas. And there's like, you know, a gate that goes between kind of like uptown and downtown. So yeah, we decided to kind of play into that. But that is, you're right, it is in a lot of 80s movies. And like,
you're always in a park or like an old like welding factory or something. Yeah. Which I like.
Well, like I think Escape from New York, which takes place in obviously like Manhattan, where we are right now, has turned into a penal colony. But they shot it in, I think, in St. Louis.
Did they?
Because there'd been like a massive downtown fire that had kind of decimated whole blocks, and they were like, we'll have it, we'll take it, we'll shoot there.
I just rewatched that the other day. Lee Van Cleef as like that main police guy. So good. Oh, everyone,
the whole thing is so good. I watched it recently as well. It's so great.
Second one gets a little dicey when you're like surfing on the thing and playing basketball, but
great end scene though.
Yes.
The end scene of Escape from LA is badass.
Yes.
It is a great end scene.
Yeah.
Sticking on the production, by the way, I've noticed this as a trend in your movie kind of keeps it going is retro future, I don't know, I guess you would call that the retro futurism, where it's, you know, grimy, what basically what you would imagine the tech would have been, I guess, in Stephen King when he wrote it. I should ask.
Like the tape decks, for example. Yeah. Like it's like a retro future tech. You know, what they imagined it looked like then versus now. Yeah.
I guess
versus
my question would be, what is the, why is this trend happening? And is,
because they do it in Alien Romulus too.
Yeah, yes, there's like, been, I think, like five sci-fi movies in the past. Like,
there's a couple of good answers for this. Number one is smartphones in cinema are boring.
Yeah, they ruin a lot of things. Yeah,
smartphones are like the death of the thriller. Mm-hmm. So it's all in the book, and we kind of, the first thing you think, like the easy thing to do is like, oh, everything's like digital, everything's smartphones. You know, the obvious thing is he's, you know, has to do selfies for the show. But we just thought, well, why don't we, if we go this retro futuristic thing of it's the like Stephen King's imagined 2025. Mm-hmm. Some people have got smartphones. Uptown people have got smartphones. Not everybody's got one. Some people have still got the payphone booth and their co-op. Like, but keep all the analog stuff. Like the running cam on that. When we were on set, everybody wanted to play with the camera because it's this chunky like clamshell video camera that you have to flip up and press record and put a tape in. And it looks cool.
It's awesome.
And it fits in as like it's chunky wallet sized. And, you know, the envelopes and the post boxes, you know, the drone post boxes. My brother designed the post boxes. Actually,
oh, no way.
With the kind of happy face and the sad face.
It pops out of the thing.
Yeah, it pops out. It actually, that is a physical prop. It didn't fly off, but it did
lift
up.
You could detach? Oh, that's cool.
So actually, there's one of my favorite, my favorite shot in the movie is when Glenn is at the New York hotel and he leaves and in the middle of like a traffic jam, and there's kind of like all sorts of, you know, Friday night stuff going on the streets, and goes and posts the mail and walks back, and you see the post box go whoop, you know, starts kind of taking off. That was the idea, was like, that's, and also that thing, do you know about like cassette futurism?
Is that like the specific term to describe this?
Yeah.
Well, I do like
it. It's not particular, but it's a fun thing to look at online. It's like it's a whole thing where they said that in the 80s and 90s, the designs that you would get on VHS cassettes and audio tapes with all these kind of cool rainbow lines and stuff, always like imagined a more like colorful future than we actually got.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true.
So there's a lot of that. If you see the cars, like all the EVs, we took existing sort of cars, and some of them, like the ones in Slumside, the kind of, they're like retrofitted gas guzzlers that have been made into EVs. And then the uptown ones, we had all these 80s cars, which we then digitally added stuff to.
Oh, so cool.
They've all got these cool, like,
The neon lines. Yeah, exactly.
Those are very cool. The cassette futurism stuff.
Without any spoilers, what was your favorite sequence to film? It can be as broad strokes as possible, I guess.
I'd say, all of the action sequences are, like, really tough to shoot because they're so complicated. But they're fun when they start coming together. I'd say probably the two ones. So lots of the sequences are so complicated that I couldn't. The word fun would be in big inverted commas because it's just like a lot of hard work. And even the cast is fun and the crew are great. Like, I'd say the two things would be the Glenn and Michael Cera together. It's just like fun to see those two together. Such an unlikely sort of comic duo. Mm-hmm. And like, I obviously first time working with the only person in the entire cast that I'd worked with before was Michael Cera.
Oh yeah.
And first time since Scott Pilgrim 15 years ago. And then the other scene that was just fun to kind of see it happening, because it felt like you set the scene and then the whole scene is kind of just happening with its own sort of energy, was all the scenes on the set with Coleman as the host, because he whipped up those extras into a frenzy.
Oh, yeah?
Himself. I mean, we have an AD department, but Coleman's getting that crowd going. And there was a point where I was standing on set and it's like, there's cheerleaders, there's fire. Is Coleman like throwing his hand to the audience? The audience are going nuts. Glenn's on stage. Everybody's like screaming at him. There was a day when Glenn's kind of, you know, basically as soon as he walks out, he's kind of in the stocks, and like, you know, it's like, and I always liked the thing, and this is not a spoiler, but Josh Brolin and Coleman Domingo were so nice to him at the side of the stage. And then as soon as he goes out on stage, boom.
Yeah.
And when we were shooting, there were some of the people from accounts in the office wanted to come down and be an extra for a day.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys came up to me at the wrap party and he says, I have to tell you, I came down and I was an extra in the studio, and I can't tell you how therapeutic it was to scream abuse at Glenn Powell all day. Somebody that I've never met, and I'm just like shouting, kind of like sort of like turning the air blue, screaming, kind of like, fuck you, fuck die, Richards. So he just said, I said, that was the best day I've ever had on set.
Oh, that's so awesome.
By the way, do you think, like, this is bleak, but we got Beast Games, we got Squid Game in real life now. How long until we get The Running Man?
Like an actual guy, like, trying to run around.
Hopefully they don't, you know, take it all the way, but...
The sad thing is, you know, people would watch it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it'd
be appointment TV.
I mean, we've got as far as we can get without the actual murder, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... The thing that's crazy about that book, and what was fun for us to do writing the script, me and Michael Bacall, which we started working on it like, you know, like 4 years ago when I first got sort of offered the chance to do it, which is, you know, amazing because I'd always wanted to. We could work on the script and the adaptation with the knowledge, excuse me, of like 25 years of a certain type of reality TV, which I kind of think really, I mean, there's always like stuff, game shows and... I think a certain type of reality TV really exploded in sort of the year 2000. And both in, you know, all over the world, like all of the kind of formats that are huge here are like sort of huge around the world. And, you know, like back in the UK, like the first big one was like Big Brother.
Big Brother for sure, yeah.
Was like enormous in the UK. Like everybody was watching that. And lots of the things that are in the film were in that, the idea of the villain edit, you know, the person, somebody's got to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
And somebody's going to be like a national villain in all the tabloids. And, you know, that happens in a lot of things where kind of, and, you know, like we've learned over the years and through exposés about what goes on behind the scenes on reality shows. And if you guys saw the Jerry Springer documentary on Netflix.
No, I
have not yet. That was
worth watching, because just before we shot all the scenes with Josh Brolin and Coleman Domingo, that documentary dropped on Netflix. Uh-huh. And it seemed to confirm absolutely everything that was in the script.
Yeah.
About, you know, just kind of how they manipulate the people who are going to be on stage. They want them to come on and fight. What they're doing to them backstage, getting them drunk.
Yeah, playing with alcohol.
Getting them riled up. And, you know, some of these people, at least if you're an actor, you sort of know what you're in for being a star. But a member of the public is not necessarily equipped for, like, national infamy, you know?
Yeah.
To be like a national laughingstock. And, you know, in a lot of these cases, I mean, Jerry Springer included, it leads to sort of murder and suicide. It's kind of some really dark, like, ends, because, like, some of these people are not prepared to be out on sort of TV.
Yeah.
And, you know, and made fools of, you know?
I imagine, like, their views of those edits are the same when, like, Ben sees, like, something like, all digitally altered of what he actually said, and he's like, what the fuck? Yeah, it's very... You can see the
villain edit.
Yeah, the villain.
That was maybe the most bleak part of the movie.
Yeah, which is so...
The deep fake stuff?
The deep fake stuff was very, like, we're getting there right now, yeah.
But without spoiling too much, one of my favorite things in the movie is when Glenn starts to lean into it.
Yeah,
He has a moment where he goes, oh, fuck it, I'll just be that guy.
Then. Yeah. again, Running Man, it's awesome. Make sure you go see it in theaters. It's so much fun. We do want to talk to you about some other stuff too, though, of course.
Sure.
I mean, the Cornetto trilogy is one of the all-time. We are.
Oh, thank you.
Do you prefer that, or do you prefer, like, the three flavors? Like, what do you prefer to call it?
Well, I don't... it's... The whole thing sort of started as a joke. I think it's so funny because I think people now sort of think that we were planning it from the
whole
start.
Way, yeah, of course.
But the truth of it is, the real truth of the three flavors going at a trilogy is when we made Shaun of the Dead, we had a Cornetto, and Cornetto for the American listeners is a brand of ice cream that's popular all over the world except the States.
Except for us, yeah. It's like the Robbie Williams of ice cream, basically.
It's the Robbie Williams of ice cream. Yeah. That's a very, very good analogy. I'll never not think of that now.
We loved Better Man, were like, we don't know who this guy is. Who is this guy? And we watched the movie like, this is tremendous. Who is this guy? Yeah, it's very new for us.
I know. The Robbie Williams is the Cornetto of music. So we had it in the first film, and we got free ice cream at the premiere. And me and Sam were like, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. Not that alone that we had a West End premiere for our movies, that we got free ice cream. So when we were writing Hot Fuzz, we said, hey, we should put Cornettos in again and we'll get some free ice cream at the premiere. Didn't happen for Hot Fuzz premiere. I don't know what happened. But when we were doing the press tour for Hot Fuzz, one journalist, Chris Tilley, I think, said, oh, you've had Cornettos in both your movies, different flavors, strawberry in one and classic vanilla in the second. Does this mean you're going to do a trilogy? And I said as a joke, yes, it's our tribute to Krzysztof Kieslowski. He had the three colors trilogy. So this is the three flavors Cornetto trilogy. And then every interview after that, like somebody would ask us about it to the point where it's like you're manifesting it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of really where it started. And of course, we did do a third one and we did have a different flavor Cornetto.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what, guys? Third time around, we got the ice cream back.
You did get it back for World's End? Nice. So Shaun of the Dead is a movie I loved growing up. And for me, my dad loved Monty Python growing up, and we'd never really found something like a good substitute through the years. And then when we found Shaun of the Dead, we're like, this is it. Like, this is that same brand of humor we've been looking for, at least available in the United States. So when we watched that, we loved it. You've mentioned how it's influenced by time playing Resident Evil. I was curious if you ever had any interest in making an adaptation of that, and if you were excited at all for the Zach Cregger now is making an adaptation.
Well,
too.
Zach Cregger's already got it, hasn't he?
Yeah, he does have one.
He's already got it in the bag.
There's like 50 of these being made at any given point. They have animated ones coming out.
Pick a video game right now. They're going to give you an adaptation.
Yeah.
I mean...
I know it's funny. I think people. I'm gonna disappoint. I think people think I'm a bigger video game nerd than I am. And what I mean is, I'm a lapsed one.
Gotcha.
I used to I grew up with I'm old enough to have grown up with the home computers, and then the early days of the first PlayStation and everything, and probably around the time when Shaun was coming out was probably the last time that I was a serious gamer.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of felt there was a point where I had to get the console out of the house. It was
to get productive, yeah.
It was like the Ouija board. It's like, I have to get this console out of the house. Yeah. Otherwise, I'll never write a screenplay. So kind of around the time of Spaced and Shaun of the Dead was the sort of... My brother is still a massive gamer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tend to kind of play things around at his house.
Gotcha.
Back to the Cornetto trilogy, by the way. Like, up and down that casting list is just... Crazy. I mean, it's insane. Is that... pure luck, skill? What was going on with your casting department at that point? Like,
because you turn around and it's like Olivia Colman is here.
That first movie.
Yeah, yes. It's crazy.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
I mean, a lot of the people that were ones that we... I mean, there are people in it that just came through casting who then have blown up, like mm-hmm. Rafe Spall,
mm-hmm.
like was in the first one.
Olivia, Patty Considine, like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, Patty, we had been in the Shane Meadows films, and we really liked him in this film. A Room for Romeo Brass.
Mm-hmm.
And then around, I tell you what it was. When we were doing the press for Shaun of the Dead, his film Dead Man's Shoes, which is fantastic, his revenge thriller, that was out. And in that movie, he's really tough. Like the sort of Shane Meadows kind of revenge movie. But we hung out with him like on these, and we found out what a goofy, funny guy he was. So we just stuck in our, and he was a big fan of like Shaun and Space. So it was like, oh, we got to use him. And he's so funny. Like, for somebody who can be a really intense actor as well, he's got a really, he's amazing sort of sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of how that came about. But then the other people who, like, in Shaun of the Dead, we shot Bill Nighy, like, we had him in the movie, and we'd shot his part before Love Actually came out, and mm-hmm. then he completely blew up in Love Actually. I mean, he's already been around as a sort of veteran actor, but that was the film that made him like a household name. And then suddenly he's in our film as well. So we were really lucky, you know?
Yeah, of course. Another one, the line that always have stuck with me forever, the 22nd of February line, has always been one that I love. I love when you tweet it every date, anniversary date.
I wonder where that guy is now. I'd love to know what he's up to.
Yeah. So as a writer, do you ever get like the feeling that a specific line is going to be a hit? And in the inverse, is there ever a line where you wrote it and you're like, this is going to be amazing. People are going to love this. And it just didn't register with people as much as you thought.
That's interesting. I have to think about the latter ones. There's definitely ones that you think kind of a sticky, like you've got red on you. You've got a feeling about it, you know? And then there are things in there that, like, usually it's another gag that's something where, you know, I know in Shaun of the Dead, like, something that maybe it wasn't until we tweaked the sound effect. I think the first time, there's the bit where, like, the zombie gets off the pole, like Mary in the garden, and Nick Frost picks up the fun camera and winds it on. Yeah. Now, the first time we kind of, like, showed it, that sound effect wasn't loud enough. The second time we really cranked it up, it, like, brings the house down.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's things like that where you kind of... So there's sometimes you know, and sometimes there are things that you're not expecting to be the thing that kind of... And actually, Running Man has a few things like that, where it's like there are, you know, when we had our first test screening here in New Jersey, actually, you know, there are things that you hope will kind of, like, land, and then there's other lines that just kind of, like, completely kill that you're not kind of expecting.
Yeah. One thing we want to ask you, and this is something I want to try with directors now, is actors that we think would be great in one of your movies, one where I'm, where, like, this guy fits your sensibilities or what you usually do. And my pick when we put this together was Simon Russell Beale, who in Death of Stalin, I'm like, that guy should be Edgar Wright. He is so hysterical in Death of Stalin that I was like, that is a guy you'd be so great with.
I'm in.
Yeah. And who was yours?
Robert Pattinson.
Oh, well, yeah.
Easy guy to get.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very easy schedule.
I don't know if you've seen any of these.
We've almost done things together a couple of times now. So I know Robert, and like he, you know, like I should probably shouldn't say this, but it's quite funny. No, he actually auditioned for Scott Pilgrim for the same part as Chris Evans.
No way.
This was before Twilight had blown up. But obviously, listen, Robert's amazing, but obviously that, you couldn't really imagine anybody else other than the Chris Evans doing that
big
part.
Jock guy. Yeah.
But he was good. And like, I mean, and I've talked to Robert about other things since and stuff. So I hope to get to work with him. I love him.
Oh, me too. He's such a goofball. I don't know if you've been watching these press tours on with Jennifer Lawrence.
No, I haven't actually.
He's
definitely underrated sort of comic chops.
Yes. I'd like to see him. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Really quick questions before we let you go. Who is one actor that you would love to work with? Forget what we think. Who's one where you're like, that's a guy I just need once?
Before it's too late, Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood? Oh, wow. That would be tremendous.
I mean, that might have already missed it.
Yeah, he would probably want to direct you, if anything. He loves directing.
But only two takes, though. Or maybe one take max. I mean, I'm a big Clint Eastwood fan.
Oh,
I'm glad. I don't know if he's going to be acting anymore, but he's still directing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, 93 years old, making good movies. Yeah. Crazy. If you had an unlimited budget to make any movie you wanted right now, what would you make? Do you have any ideas?
Oh, my God. I mean, I feel like sort of it's weird sort of coming off this because I feel like this was kind of it in a way. And not to say that there isn't something else, but I do really feel with this movie, which we only started shooting it like just over a year ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Quick turnaround. Which is crazy. Like for my biggest, most complicated movie and only really finished like about 3 weeks ago. Finished. It's kind of wild. So, and I do feel like this is something that, because I've like imagined this film since I was a teenager, and for it to actually exist is kind of crazy to me. So I sort of have to think what that next thing is in terms of like, what's that passion project or something that I've always wanted to do? I mean, it'd be fun to do something that's even more sci-fi.
Sure, yeah.
You know, to go even sort of like further, harder. That could be really cool.
Last Action Hero, maybe Total Recall. Just go on the Arnold maybe list. Or
well, it's funny. We got to, me and Glenn, I don't know if you saw that thing on Instagram where we presented Arnold with the money.
Yeah.
He came to see it last week and he'd been very generous because there's a little, it's in the trailer, so it's not too much of a spoiler, but in the new currency, in this alternate 2025, we imagined that in our alternate 2025, they changed the rules. People born outside the United States could become president. Mm-hmm. So the former governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, did become president, ran for office. And so he's on the currency and he's now on the $100 bill. So we needed to get his photo approval for that, which he gave us, which is very kind. And then, you know, and Glenn is friends with Patrick and stuff. So they kind of, we had a call with him like before we started shooting, which was amazing. But we said we should show him the movie. And we presented him with a massive $100 bill with his face on. But what was nice, and he was really complimentary about the movie. And he sort of said that the original 1987 one had some problems.
Sure.
Like they had fired their director and Paul Michael Glazer was a replacement for Andrew Davis, who directed The Fugitive. So it was kind of a troubled production. But And he really loved what we'd done and was really, really complimentary. But I also, I got to say to him, and it's funny you said about, what, you know, what did you take from the 87 one? I did say, he said, oh, it's ironic because I think the film of yours that has more of an influence on this one is Total Recall.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can totally see that.
I thought that too.
You literally described it. Yeah.
Saturday night, I threw it on because I was like, this really does feel like Total Recall. Is that just Verhoeven's influence on you? Or?
Yeah, I mean... Paul Verhoeven in RoboCop, Total Recall, and Starship Troopers. It's an unimpeachable sci-fi trilogy, and also so really satirical as well. Mm-hmm. Like those movies. I mean, that was something that was already there in the book, but definitely, and that's another 1987 film. You know, separate from the original Running Man, that's like was an influence on this. Is like just having like you know sci-fi action, but with this satirical streak. I mean, it's like that film is perfect.
It's nothing like it.
Yeah. So you've been a self-professed Coen Brothers fan for a long time.
Yeah.
Would you rather write a movie that the Coen Brothers direct or direct a movie that they wrote?
I think probably direct a script of theirs would be pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. It hasn't happened too often, but it does happen.
Yeah. Every now and then you get there. We're also huge.
I actually, Joel Coen came to see it the other night.
No way.
It was so cool. I mean, I very... grateful to have got to know them like sort of in the last like, 20 years, but Joel came to see the movie the other night.
Yeah. Do you want
what was that?
Do you want to ask the Kevin Smith story?
Oh, the Kevin Smith. Been on the airwaves recently. Yes. He had recently said that he had an invite to a screening and then a party, and then he overslept. Is he getting another invite?
I mean, it's out on Friday, so I mean, maybe Kevin, I'll call you.
Yeah,
I'll text him as soon as I get out of this. He did. I was in such a kind of whirl because I invited him, and then he texted me and he said, "He goes, oh man, I overslept. How did it go?" I didn't realize. Okay, I should call him.
Yeah. So again, Running Man, November 14th. Make sure to check it out. It is a movie that you have to watch on the big screen. It is so much fun, so much fun. And Glenn Powell is the most effortlessly, endlessly charismatic leading man you could possibly ask for, and like you said,
thank you.
He doesn't get to do this very often, and it is so fun. And it's just I saw it in a we're going to do a big office screening at the Paramount Theater very soon, and I can't wait for the rest of our coworkers to go and watch it.
Thank you. Make sure
to go see it. Thank you so much, Edgar Wright. And again, November 14th, The Running Man.
All right,
we had help
on August 21st.
We have a story.
Mutiny arrives on the big screen.
Who are you?
It is Trust Me.
Jason Statham stars in the action movie to end your summer.
What do you want?
Vengeance.
Mutiny. Rated R.
Thank you to Edgar Wright. One of my favorites. Top 10 dumbest franchises now, though. Here's the order. Ken Jack first, then Gooch, then myself, then Klemmer back to back, then myself, then Gooch, then Ken Jack. And then I did a random wheel. Klemmer, because we only have four this week, Klemmer and Ken Jack at the 9th and 10th picks. So the dumbest franchises... This is we're going to leave this up for a little bit of interpretation, so we can argue it out. We're not saying worst, just dumbest. Some of these might have a good movie or two, but the franchise as a whole might be really stupid. So, Ken Jack, what's the dumbest franchise?
I think not to be too like on the nose, I guess I'm going to go with Now You See Me. I think it is an incredibly dumb franchise. I don't know how they keep like going after these magician franchise movies when they just like. They're doing it's the same trick every time. It's CGI magic. Like, how is this? How? But it's making money. And I guess, like, this is where we kind of go into the interpretation of it, right? Where, like, there's franchises where, like, they have a banger first movie and then terrible movies after that. There are other movies here which are highly successful. There are other movies where they're, you know, banging at the box office, critical darlings, whatever. I just think this is a very dumb franchise. I think it's very, very dumb. And again, like you were saying, doesn't necessarily mean worst, but it is certainly dumb.
I think it is the definition of one of the dumbest things possible.
There's dumber things out there. I think there'll be movies nominated by us or movies on this list that are dumber than this movie, than this series. The series is very dumb.
We talked about Nazis with Nuremberg a second ago. We completely glossed over the fact that in the most recent Now You See Me, they do shoehorn in World War II because the Allies used magic to fool the Nazis. That was a great throwaway, like 2 minutes inside that chateau in Paris. They're like, oh, yeah. Remember back in World War II, the Allies had to set up fake tanks to fool the Germans. Why? Why was that included?
Can't defend that.
Now You See Me is a perfect number one pick. It would have been my number one pick as well. Gooch.
Would not have been my number one pick. There's a lot of dumb franchises, believe it or not.
and I'm kind of between two, but I'm going to go with the most recent one. It just died, RIP, and that is the Sony Pictures universe of Marvel characters, a franchise.
That's a good one. That's a good call. That's, yep, yep.
I had Venom on its own, but we can.
This all ties in because it's you set up an entire franchise of Spider-Man's villains without being able to use fucking Spider-Man. And not only that, all these movies are just terrible, terrible. I can get on board with like a little bit of the Venom franchise and like it has that Now You See Me quality to it where it's really fucking stupid, but at points very fun. But outside of that, I mean, Morbius, Madam Web, Kraven, these are like zero to 10 out of 100. Like these are fucking dog shit movies that really don't make sense. Kraven made no sense. Venom 2 is one of the worst things I've ever seen. And it's shocking that it like lasted as long as it did. Like it's shocking that those movies, like they continued cranking those out. I know it probably had something to do with the rights, but good Lord, they could never figure it out. They didn't have one that was like, this is pretty fucking good. They didn't have one of those. Maybe Venom is the best one in that whole franchise. The first Venom, not a great movie.
When we look back on Marvel and superhero movies and biggest missteps, like Sony being like, we need this for ourselves, is going to be one of the all time miscalculations. Just such a whiff. And like, their need to try and involve themselves with the MCU will always be one of the grossest, like, ugh. Amy Pascal, stick to just producing the Spider-Verse movies. Like, yeah, that's you're good enough with those. That's a good pick. I didn't actually even think about combining those. That's a great pick. Three for me. This one hurts me because I think the first movie is fucking awesome. I think it's awesome. Which, by the way, I meant to show off. I got on physical media, Cuckoo's Nest. Awesome. Oh, nice. Steelbook. There you go. And then I'm adding to my Christmas collection, got the Grinch, the Jim Carrey Grinch movie. And I thought about, and I was reminded of that because I've ordered the Transformers Steelbook, and the company I ordered from has sent it dented and broken four times in a row now in the last month and a half, which is a sign, by the way. Just it's like they get it back and they just bang it out with a hammer one more time and send it back to me. But the Transformers franchise is so stupid after the first movie and so convoluted. And the rules, and it's like the cube, and then the matrix of leadership. the matrix of leadership is the dumbest MacGuffin in the history of movies. And I love the first two movies. The second one stinks. I think the first one's like kind of quiet, like a pretty awesome like action movie for what it is. But the rest of them, they just get dumber and dumber and dumber. And Bumblebee was okay, but they just can't figure it out, except for the animated one, which is pretty awesome. But like the live action Transformers movies, they're just so stupid. And even in the first one, like the Transformers peeing on John Turturro,
the being scrotum, right?
Then like, yeah, the second one, they're like kind of racist. Like it's like a little weird. It's just, yeah, it's they're dumb. They're really dumb. So yeah, Transformers number three. Clemmer, you have back-to-back picks.
I'm going to go with Alvin the Chipmunks. This is the David Cross Alvin the Chipmunks series. Absolutely horrible. I had
list.
One of them was called Chipwrecked, I believe.
Chipwrecked, yeah.
I had to watch these. I used to do a pop culture podcast called Quantum Week, and we had to cover these movies, and they were just so bad and so stupid. And it's a shame because like the 80s cartoon Alvin Chipmunks was actually kind of good. Like growing up, I enjoyed it. And this just, I don't know, like, they're so annoying. Like, I don't know what parent would want their, because kids watch movies over and over again. Like, to watch, I can't imagine the hell that you'd be in having your kid love these movies and have to watch them every day for like 6 months straight. It would be horrible. And David Cross, I mean, he's admitted he just did it for the money. Like, obviously they all did. And they all act that way. Like, that you can tell they're all checked out. It's a soulless movie that in many ways is.
It is like, soulless is a perfect way to describe it.
They're evil movies. Like, they're just done for like financial reasons. There's no art involved. It's everything that's wrong with movies are the Alvin Chipmunk
films. They're evil movies. The Chipmunk movies are evil. I like
they
that.
Are. They are. They are. There's an element of evil in them. Yes. Yeah. So that's my pick there. And the next pick is Friday the 13th, which kind of like what we're talking about with Transformers. The first Friday the 13th is good. The second one's like they're not bad to start. By the end, he's in New York, but he's not really in New York. because he's actually like on a boat to New York, if you watch that one. And then he ends up in space, Jason. Like, it just gets so ridiculous and so horrible by the end, which is kind of a shame because like the Jason Voorhees character is pretty awesome. And they completely ruined him by the end of the 80s. Like, in one decade, he went from being one of the coolest, scariest guys around to being like a punchline.
A lot of horror movies do this too. Like, I feel like we could just make this list with solely horror movies. Because like every single time one of them hits, immediately the studio's like, all right, now make 5,000 of them. And we do not care quality, just make them. And that's
sending into space though is a different level of ruining.
Which one is that? H2O?
H2O is H2O because it's 20 years later. Because Jamie Lee Curtis is in that.
Yes.
Isn't like X or something?
That's Halloween. Jason X. Jason X is space.
Yeah, dude. Wait, okay. So Jason X, ridiculously stupid. There is a very cool scene where he freezes a lady's head in nitrous and like for like or whatever, and then he slams it and breaks her head into a million pieces. It's fucking awesome. It's so cool.
It's a good pick. I actually need that on my
this
list.
I'm looking at the wiki right now. This is one of the all time fakest names I've ever seen for the star of Jason X, Lexa Doig. You just look at this. You just got to read that name. That's one of the all time fakest names I've ever seen. Sorry.
Oh my God. What a fucking. Yeah. Jason X. We did a watch along of that a couple years back. My next pick. I don't want to piggyback off of Clemmer's pick too much because it's like kind of right in the same realm. But I think I'm going to have to go with. The Divergent franchise.
Oh, good.
The Divergent franchise. Speaking of piggybacked off of the Hunger Games, piggybacked off of all those types of like YA dystopian movies. And the last one was so bad, it didn't even get like a real. What was it released on again? We talked about this a couple weeks ago.
It's like Spectrum. I think it released the like Spectrum.
Yeah, like it was on like Spectrum TV. Like I think I said like DirecTV, like now or something. They're so bad. And I remember reading a thing where like Shailene Woodley called Jennifer Lawrence, like, hey, I'm in Divergent. Like, how do I embrace this like massive phenomenon type thing? It's so bad. Oh. But it has an insane cast of people, crazy people in this thing. You have Shailene Woodley, Theo James, Miles Teller, Ansel Elgort, Jai Courtney, Kate Winslet, Zoe Kravitz. There's so many people. Tony Goldwyn is in this. Rest in peace, Ray Steele. I think actually Judd's in this.
Yeah, they thought that they're going to be in the next Hunger Games. That's why they all signed up.
All the movies are terrible, and they get worse and worse and worse. So I'm going to go Divergent franchise. I left one on the board, though, which I'm curious if somebody picks it, which I think belongs on here. We'll see. Gooch, you're up next.
Ooh. Let's see if it's going to be it. There is one that's kind of obvious, and I think would be like if you polled 100 Americans, like this – it would be the franchise they pick. I'm leaving it on the board for now, and I'm going to go with, maybe this will be controversial, but Twilight. I know it has like its fans. It's probably not controversial among us, but good Lord, does that franchise have like a rabid fan base? And I've never really been able to figure it out because good Lord, those movies are fucking terrible from front.
It's the books though, right? End. That's bad. That's where it comes from.
The books are bad. And the books are bad. I read the books when I was in middle school because I had a hot teacher who was also reading them, and I decided that'll work. That'll work. And good Lord, did those books also stink. They just make no, like, by the end, they make no fucking sense at all. Like, break all their in-universe rules. It's like horny, but it's not because I think Stephanie Myers is Mormon, so like, they have to like skirt around a lot of like anything that would be interesting with their like vampires. And then you got like werewolves that aren't werewolves. They're actually shapeshifters. It's bad. It's bad. And like, it makes good actors in that franchise look like they, like Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson are two of the best working actors today. They look like the worst actors who've ever lived in that franchise. It's so bad.
Yeah, it's a good pick. Does it mean though that the other thing inspired by it needs to be on the list as well? We'll see if somebody picks it. Ken, Jack.
I'm kind of torn because there's movies that I think are really, really bad, but like they make mono. You know what? I'll go 50 Shades because 50 Shades was like an obvious no brainer. Like you need to make these movies, but I do think that like how at no point when they were casting this, putting this together, did they not realize like these people have no chemistry. They have zero chemistry. They are not good at this performance. Like Dakota Johnson is just not built for that whatsoever. And neither is Jamie Dornan. And we've seen Jamie Dornan now in other stuff, and he's fantastic. Like, he's in a... You remember that Barb and Star movie? Why is he not doing million of those movies? He was
great in Belfast.
Yeah.
That's a movie, if you want to talk about me being too sentimental. I love Belfast. Like, an insane amount.
Yeah, Belfast saw a movie.
Big time. Love that movie. But this movie, like, I just don't know how they got made and how it got past the process where they're like, we just have two people who aren't good at this together with no chemistry, and let's just make three movies out of it. And they make the franchise made like $1 billion and change, and they cost probably next to nothing to make. So, like, I get why you did it, but it's just, they stink. They're so bad. They have no chemistry. There's nothing to watch. Like, there's nothing good about watching those movies. Like, it's almost more procedural, which kind of sucks. Cause it did obviously like catch fire the whole, I don't know what you call it, BDSM, I guess, for moms. But just sucks, man. They're really bad.
I liked when he got in a helicopter crash and then was fine, like,
oh yeah,
10 minutes, like a minute later.
Very Grey's Anatomy, yeah.
Obviously inspired by Twilight. It's Twilight fan fiction. So I feel like if you have Twilight on here, we have to have that on here. It's like it's just too perfect.
Probably give 50 Shades credit for at least like giving into the horniness of the franchise.
Yeah.
Which, like, Twilight never goes there.
Yeah.
Clemmer.
This is tough. So I guess I'll ask you guys, should I go with kind of the more obscure one that's really dumb, or do I go with the more popular one that I think is like probably better for the list? I'll let you guys decide.
I think you go with your heart on this one, not necessarily the...
All right. Yeah. So my heart then is a series, movie series called Puppet Master.
Oh, God. Well, no, go with the other one. What even is Puppet Master?
Well, Puppet Master is a movie is in the 80s about this guy, Andre
Turlong. Oh, okay.
Who gave his puppets powers, and they've made, I don't know, 15 of the movies. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen, but that's fine. We don't need, it's so obscure, and it's just horrible. I would then go with American Pie.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm glad you went with that. I like a little controversy.
Yeah, the first American Pie movie embraces how dumb it is, and that's fun. It's kind of its charm, is it stupid? Like, I think American Pie is wildly overrated by people. And remember, this came out when I was that age. Like, if anyone should love it, it's me. But like, it's not anywhere near like a great teen comedy that we saw, you know, in the 80s or even like 10 Things I Hate About You.
I think there were better ones like coming out concurrently with that in terms of like teen sex comedies.
Like, 10 Things I Hate About You is a much better teen movie than American Pie. And obviously American Pie is going to be more raunchy. But it's fine. The other ones are just bad, and it's just obviously just money grabs and just not good movies. And the first one, I think, doesn't hold up particularly well. It's really creepy if you watch it now. But for what it was at its time, it's fine. The other ones are just abysmal.
Yeah, and I think you have to throw the spinoff series into that as well.
Sure. Beta House. If you want to do that, then they're just atrocious movies. Then
I think you have to. I think it's like part of it. I think it's unfair. Like, I like the American Reunion. That was kind of fun. Pies too. American Wedding is bad. The Band Camp, Naked Mile, Beta House, The Book of Love, and Girls Rules.
That's tough. It's a tough library of films. So yeah, American Pie, pretty. But Puppet Master is horrible. If anyone knows, if anyone's older and remembers Puppet Master, oh God.
That's a good number nine. There's a couple that are going to be left off here. Kendrick, you have the last pick.
I think I'm going to go with... I have a kind of affinity for these movies. And I kind of enjoy the first one, despite never playing the games. And I love the fact that this motherfucker and his real director-sounding name just keeps casting his wife in these movies and making absolute dog shit out of them. Resident Evil. I'm going to go with Resident Evil. There's been six of these movies. They're pretty much all terrible. And it's just, they're bad. They're really, really bad movies, especially after the first one. The first one has a little bit of charm to it, but like, they're terrible. But I understand why a studio would keep greenlining, because they cost nothing to make, like, and they make a fuck ton of money, as most horror movies, action horror movies make. They're just bad. They're so, so, so bad. And they just kept making them. And they just didn't stop. And I don't, Paul Wes Anderson, he has legendary lore in LCB fame. I love him, and I love the fact that he loves his wife, and he just keeps making terrible, terrible movies with her. Like the fucking, was it Monster Hunter from a couple years ago?
I mean, In the Lost Lands.
The Lost Lands. Like, he's like, I'm going to keep making dog shit movies with my wife. That's a true wife guy, and I love and appreciate him. I just do not like these movies very much.
It's a good pick. Now You See Me, Sony Pictures on Marvel characters, Transformers, Alvin and the Chipmunks, Jason, right? We went with Jason, Clemmer?
Friday 13th, yeah.
Friday 13th. Sorry. Friday 13th. Divergent, Twilight, 50 Shades of Grey, American Pie, Resident Evil. I had three that the one I wanted to put on here badly was The Purge. An all-time great concept, bad execution. Really, absolutely. Really dumb franchise. Could never figure it out. Paranormal Activity as well, which is...
Dude, yes. There's seven of them.
The marked ones. Oh, just terrible.
Next of kin.
Yeah. And then another one. This is kind of like the... I was talking about, I didn't want to like do this because Clemmer had Alvin the Chipmunks. The Smurfs. They make money. They make like well over 100 million at the box, but like they're just so stupid.
Ooh. The most recent Smurfs movie though is so much better than anything that.
But who is asking for more Gargamel? Who is asking for it?
Not me. I saw it because it's 1,000 screens, but it was good. It was better than Alvin and Chipmunks. It was not good.
I hate the Smurfs.
There is one franchise that I'm shocked we didn't mention, and it's the one that I thought like any American would pick, and that's Fast and Furious.
Yeah. There's enough good ones where
is that too like
it gets stupid. It gets really, really fucking stupid.
It does. It's definitely dumb. And the last two are really the last three are really, really dumb. I wouldn't hate Fast and Furious on here, but I almost feel like it's too like oddly on the nose.
That's where I was at with it. I'm like, this is like, I kind of like how dumb it is.
Yeah.
I had some other ones in there too. Old Guard. Don't know how a second one of those got made.
God, the fact that the franchise is crazy.
Yeah. Also like Jaws. They made a bunch of fucking Jaws movies. Probably
the first one's so good though.
It raises the tide. Yeah. Taken probably could be on there too, but like the first one is good, and it's just like, how many times can this bitch get taken? Scream probably.
Scream?
Scream.
No.
There's like a million of these things, man. And like whatever. Also Pitch Perfect. There's been like three or four Pitch Perfect movies?
Been a couple Pitch Perfect. Yeah, that Pitch Perfect did not need a sequel, that is for sure.
Yeah. Highlander had some dog shit sequels. And the first one, it isn't that great to begin with. I like it as a cult classic, and the Queen soundtrack is great. But like there's a lot of them and they're all bad. And Maze Runner, after you mentioned Divergent, Maze Runner probably could have been on there.
The Scorch Trials.
The Scorch Trials.
Yeah. Oh shit. Oh yeah, baby.
Me and Jeff saw that in theaters together, I think.
The first one's good.
That's fine.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of other ones that I didn't think about. Yeah, Fast and Furious is definitely two. I feel like that's too on the nose. So it is dumb. It's a dumb franchise. You know what's one that I would never pick, but actually probably should have deserved a little bit of consideration? The Home Alone franchise. They've had some brutal sequels. I thought about
it. The first one's so good, though. It raises the tide too high.
And the second one.
Brutal sequels.
No, the second one is the first one. The second one and the first one are the same thing.
We had kind of a weak interview with Rob Delaney. He was not very playful for the Home Alone, the Disney Plus one, and we actually didn't get to see the movie until after we talked to him, and that was like, I don't even know what I would have talked about had I seen it beforehand, because I wouldn't have been able to. I'd been like, yeah, we saw it, but I don't know, I forgot it already. Like that, I would have had to have said that, like just a lie. It would be like I wouldn't have had an enemy to be like, this thing stinks, brother. I have no idea what they're doing with that movie.
The kid from JoJo like had just done that, and we're like, oh, nice. Yes. He was really funny in JoJo Rabbit, and then just nothing.
Some good picks though. That's it. Running Man. Now you see me, now you don't. But next week, Wicked. Wicked and something else. What it is, we will figure all that out. As always, like and subscribe wherever you're watching or listening. For Ken, Jack, Gooch, Clemmer, I'm Jeff DeLitt. We'll talk to you next time.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients and a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.